You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com. You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Find more great shows like this at WeAreLibertarians.com.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. My name is Chris Spangle. It's so nice to have all of you here. This is going to be a very fun episode. We've got a lot of great talent and Hody here on the show tonight. We've got our friend Jeff Bennett. Jeff will be on asking questions of us. It's another episode of The Path to Libertarianism Q&A. And he will be asking pointed questions, and we'll do our best to answer those. Hody Johns will be here. Ryan Hold will be here. And lo and behold, Harry Price will be here, too. So stay tuned right after this.
Warning, this show is for adults, produced by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
Welcome to the program. I've got a brand new board. It's the maiden voyage of a brand new piece of equipment, which I'll talk about here in a moment once I get everybody introduced. But first and foremost, back from his third round of the coronavirus, it is Harry Price. Harry, how are you doing tonight?
I'm better. I've got enough. So I got ginger ale, and I've been doing a lot of Vicks. You know. If I get it again, I'll probably do essential oils. But yeah, I'm doing okay.
You got to get thieves, man. Get thieves. That'll take care of it right away. We have Reinhold here. Reinhold, how are you?
I'm doing well.
All right. Great to see that mic turned around. So Reinhold did an entire episode. Before the show, I was like, hey, you might turn your mic around. It sounds like it's turned around. He's like, there's no way that could possibly happen. I'm staring at the microphone, and afterwards he's man enough to admit he did the full Elizabeth Warren and came out that he was 2022nd wrong, and he had the mic turned around. Yes, it still makes me laugh every single time.
What's funny is you go back and watch the podcast, and you can see the blue light. On the microphone in the whole shot, the whole way through.
So funny. Hody Johns. Hody, how are you?
I'm great. I'm well vaccinated. Thank you.
I know. So it is great to have you here. There isn't a week that's been going by lately since you were on that last Path episode that people are asking, when is the Wall Daily coming back? And my answer is it's never coming back. It was too much content for you people. You can't handle a daily episode yet, but we got a lot of great ratings, huge ratings on those. But we are going to bring back it in a different format called Libertarian Politics and Policy. I just recorded one about the coronavirus that will air the day before this one, this episode. And Hody, Reinhold, everybody is going to start doing more episodes. Correct?
That is correct.
Yes.
That's what I like to hear. All right. Fear instilled in the troops. That's the way you manage things, Harry.
If you don't do one, you don't get on the weekly. So
that's exactly right. So Hody will be back doing more episodes. You're also working on some cool stuff. What are some other things that you're working on?
Oh, real cool stuff. So there's two new things. We're going to do some reaction videos. We're going to watch kind of what everybody else is watching in the news, things that they might have seen, things that are popular. Take it about like a 3 to 5 minute clip of it. And then we're going to discuss it for about 30 to 40 minutes with the wall people, all of us. And that's one. And then the other one, we've actually got a debate. We've even got one scheduled and coming up. Well, I shouldn't say scheduled. We've got one coming up. I have the debaters. I need to schedule it. We're going to have Spike Cohen running for vice president of the United States in the Libertarian Party. And our buddy, either Reinhold or Ryan Lindsay, one of the two, is going to be debating as well. And they're going to be talking about the role of private police. And we're actually going to touch on that a little bit in this show. But there you go. A couple coming up. And so we're going to keep doing debates, do some reaction videos. I'm excited for all that stuff. My gal Jamie is actually going to help me with the reaction videos. She's a big YouTube fanatic and kind of knows some things to say. And you said we needed more girl power on the show. And I said she's close. So there you go.
You're trying to get your ass beat. Jeff Bennett, a great friend and supporter and Patreon member, is here tonight. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
This is his second pod. Listen, you slackers. Jeff and I have both done two podcasts now today. What have you people done?
Save the world.
Mm-hmm. One child at a time.
Made soup.
So, yeah. Jeff, these are your first two podcasts that you've ever done. I always love when people get into this. And, like, for us, we take it for granted. Harry barely comes on the show anymore. He's like, I stubbed my toe. I can't make it tonight. Can you say why you weren't here last week, Harry?
I went to a divorce party.
Now, when he told me that, I was like, are they there together partying? But apparently that's not what it was. What is this, Harry? What is a divorce party?
Well, the guy is being a complete and total, let's see, what's the name for that bag? You know,
Deuce
think
bag?
Of the worst bag that you have. And this guy. And it's just sandbagging
through like the Trump bag.
Yeah. Just sandbagging through the whole divorce process. And the guy has I'm not going to try to say in particular so I don't know the case, but like the guy's got a lot of cash. His retirement is with the company is amazing. And she doesn't want any of that. She just wants him to go hit left. She goes right. Mm-hmm. And everyone's fine. But he's being such a crap, you know, person about it.
Right.
That, you know, once it's now finally freaking over, we're just kind of glad it's over. Me personally, if he would have drugged his feet, I would have went after his retirement and just ate it all. But
yeah,
that's me.
Yeah. So I didn't out where you were last week, but I thought that was kind of a funny, interesting thing.
What about it, the shitty kitty?
The what?
Alley cat.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's a dive bar here in town. So Jeff is a great friend of the show. How did you find out about We Are Libertarians?
So I came across We Are Libertarians from just researching. I actually started watching Kibbe on Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And was looking just for more content. And so went to podcasts, searched libertarianism, and it was the first thing that popped up.
And that was the last thing you listened to? I mean, I was trying to think of a good self-deprecating joke, but I was like, this person believes in what we do. Don't shrink. Joe Ruiz inspired me. I'm like, no, I'm going to own it. This Jeff has learned from We Are Libertarians, and we thank him, and we're happy he's here, and I'm not going to belittle his accomplishment because of my low self-esteem.
Exactly.
Well, half of being on the show was hoping to get roasted by you. So, I mean, come on, open up the door and let's do this.
Well, I'm sure we will get to it. That's part of the fun here. If I sound a little bit different, I want to just thank Ryan Ripley. Ryan is a former Shill Report co-host. I had such a great tour of the North this past weekend. I went to see my good friend Ryan Ripley, who has a podcast called Agile for Humans and has done an amazing job turning his agile business into a business. And he started a podcast and turned it into a huge business. And I'm wondering, what the hell did I do wrong? And so he and I were talking, and I was helping him set up. Harry, I walked into Ripley's room, and he had like custom woodwork for his podcast studio, and I was like, this is the life. This is nice.
Nice.
Oh, so nice. So nice. Ripley's doing great. Check out Agile for Humans. Has a great new book out called Fixing Your Scrum, excuse me. And I was gifted while I was there a Rode Podcaster Pro, which is, so Harry, the last time you were here,
mm-hmm.
When it was hot.
Yeah.
I don't know when the last time you were here. But to my left sat a giant stack. I mean, it was probably about 4 to 5 feet tall, a board generously given by Christy Avery to We Are Libertarians many, many years ago. And then we had 4 mic processors and recorders and headphone jacks and more recorders and more headphone jacks because those things stopped working. And we just had this whole corner. Now everything is on a single table in just a little tiny beautiful box. And you know, I can play sound effects and intros, and so, you know, I can play things like this.
Paradigm of absolute control. And that's why we're just out here doing simple things, pointing out that we're meant to be in nature and be natural. And this is where we find the source that God made to transcend the new world order. And that's why they want to try to keep us out of it.
I'm angry. I've had enough of these people.
If you have never listened to Stereo Deluxe and their version of Alex Jones' remix, it's truly remarkable. And I've got that on my button bar. So I have a button bar where I can press little buttons and play all kinds of sound effects. And I just did an interview on the phone with a Bluetooth. It's really remarkable. And it just takes up... So now there's so much more room for activities for Mittens. So thank you so much to Ryan Ripley for that. We are very excited about the new equipment. So if I sound a little bit different, that's why. But we have upgraded the technology thanks to our friend. And also got a chance to talk to Joe Ruiz. If you didn't listen to that interview, have any of you had the chance to listen to that podcast with Joe?
I've not.
All right. That reflects the download numbers. But that's what I'm saying. Go back and listen to that interview with Joe. I've had multiple people say that it was truly phenomenal. And I was it was fun to catch up with Joe, who was a co-host so long ago and now is chasing his dream and talks a lot about the biggest episode on We Are Libertarians is 113,000 downloads. And it is our interview on the Shill Report with Ron Paul. And, you can go back and listen to that in our feed now. It was 2013, 2014, and it was 2013, yeah, because I was out to dinner with the ex-missus at Olive Garden, and the website crashed, and we had this interview go viral. Oddly, Oliver Darcy, now at CNN, then of The Blaze, had tweeted out this interview, and it went viral, went to HuffPo, went everywhere, and so that was truly... a great catching up with Joe, and Joe just went out and like got Noam Chomsky, and we approached Gary Vee, and Gary Vee was going to come on, but Gary Vee said, you know, okay, I'll come on, but buy a book. And we're like, okay, cool, we'll buy a book. And then Ryan had to reschedule, and he goes, well, I can't do that time, so if you want me to come on, then you need to buy 500 books. And we said, fuck you, we don't need you, Gary Vee. that's what an asshole move. He's such a scam artist. Gary Vee is a scam artist. So I've never liked that guy. He's like the pyramid schemes of marketing. So yeah. Anyways, there's like a few people. I love everybody, Jeff, but there's just a few people in the world that if you mention them, like prepare for rants, like Joshua Smith.
Melissa Hubbard.
She's funny, but like there's this one guy who was the campaign manager in 2004 for Annie Horning and stole from him. And I was at lunch with my friend Josh Gillespie. He goes, you know, and then there's that guy that I won't mention because you don't like him. And I said, oh, I mean, who are you talking about? And he mentioned the guy's name and was like, that motherfucker. And like 15 years of, because I don't care if you steal from me, but you steal from the lovely Andy Horning, then you're just a jerk. So, but anyways, it's great to talk to Joe, and you'll really get a lot out of that. Just a few more announcements here on the program. Want to thank our patrons. You guys are the ones that really make this work, and you guys are the ones that really help us out a lot. And you are, I am behind the scenes working on a ton of new things, and I won't go into detail because I have a habit of saying what I'm doing, then I get busy, and then we don't do it for 14 years. We just finally got the Liberty and Chill website up, Harry. I don't even know if you've seen this, but if you go right now to wearelibertarians.com/liberty-chill, then I put up the guide. I worked with our correspondent Paul Copeland and Christy Avery, and I put up a flyer that you can get designed for your Liberty and Chill group and the logo and some tips. And we'll list your group there. So listen, we got behind on it because we were trying to centralize everything. And now I'm saying just steal this logo and make your own thing. And if you need a flyer made, I will make the flyer for you so you can put up this little 8x10 poster around town, 8.5x11, I think. And you can get going. So go check out Liberty and Chill. But that's an idea that I was like, early 2018, we're going to do this. And it's mid-2020, and now we're on it. But about to launch the new logo. We've completely redesigned the website. So go check that out at WeAreLibertarians.com. It looks great. And we are just rolling through 2020 trying to bring in a lot of new people. And that is all possible because of our patrons, and specifically our $100 a month patrons who really make it work. And that is Matthew Durbin, Ed Brehob, Jason Doolittle, Christy Avery, and Craig DaCosta. Thank you guys so much. And some other special guests that we won't mention. But we appreciate everybody who is a patron. And to our newest patron, Agent Downwinder of Washington, who is a $25 patron. So we thank him so much for joining. Jeff, you are a patron, and we appreciate your support. Can you tell the listeners, why are you a patron? What causes you to give so generously to this program?
Well, when I started listening to We Are Libertarians about a year ago, maybe a little bit over a year ago, and I just saw something that for me was bringing me information, bringing me knowledge, gave me a lot of resources to be able to talk to others. And for me, being a small business owner, I like to support things that support me. And whether it's being indirect or directly, I felt like it was the right way to give back. So I also believe in the libertarian idealism. And I think the We Are Libertarians podcast is the best way to get that message out there. And so, so I feel totally confident giving to that.
Well, we greatly appreciate your support. It does mean a lot to us. It allows us to do a lot of great things, and you and your support and all of our patrons are the lifeblood of that. But let's talk to you. Let's talk about you, and let's find out who you are, what you do, where you live. Give us some of the details. Who is Jeff Bennett?
So I am a small business owner. I live in Fresno, California. So we are the Central Valley, for the most part, the lifeblood for California. I think we feed most of our nation's people with the produce that's grown here in Fresno. And so I've live here. I own a couple businesses here in town. Own an ice cream shop that's become pretty popular, and a cafe. Do some business advising for other small businesses and friends. That's kind of where I'm at now.
So have you become more libertarian the more of an entrepreneur you've become?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's really kind of what sparked that, other than kind of seeing the divide of the two parties over the last couple of years, and really seeing I come from a Republican background, and as I saw that party kind of drifting away really from what my ideals were, that's when I really started like searching elsewhere and looking out for that, especially in the California climate. Big government is obviously huge here.
Right.
And there's just, you pay a lot of taxes, you pay a lot of things that really don't get reciprocated back to you as the people. And so, so that's what really started down this quest for looking at that. So.
That's great. So when would you say that you started calling yourself a libertarian?
I'd probably say I started calling myself a libertarian about 6 months ago, being kind of a little bit more open about that.
Fresh fish.
I've jokingly said that this podcast, I plan on sharing it, and it's kind of my coming out to the mass public rather than more direct conversations, because I hope and plan to share this on Facebook and other areas. So,
well, if people are in the Fresno, California area, do you want to share where your ice cream store is or what it is? Give a little free plug.
Yeah, absolutely. Our ice cream shop is called Ampersand Ice Cream. We have two locations in Fresno. And then I also own the Review Cafe, which is also in the heart of Fresno. So,
okay. So, other than We Are Libertarians, and you mentioned Kibbe on Libby, what are some Kitty on Libby. What am I saying? We do these. My brain.
You said that so confidently. I was like, is it really Kitty on Libby?
It is not Kitty on Libby.
That's the hamster place.
Right? Reinhold and I were talking about this the other day. My brain at 5:30 every morning goes, good morning. Let's think about all the things you're going to do today. And I used to sleep till noon every day. And now I'm just like up at 5:30 every single day. And I'm just like, so I go to bed. And so by the time we get to 7:30 and I've, taken an hour and a half before the show to just relax, it doesn't mean that my tongue still isn't tired. Reinhold tells me that that is just a function of age.
There's a lot that goes on there, and what I found is it's good to take a nap in the afternoon.
I don't have time for that, so I guess I'll just be stupid and say Kitty on Liberty.
Get you a chair that lays flat. Just take your quick nap.
Yeah.
Get back up.
I do it on my desk.
Yep. That's what I did.
Put my feet up on my desk, lean back in my chair.
I'll tell you what powers me through these is V8 has a little energy drink that is green tea, and it's caffeine, and I really love it. It's very good. It's just enough caffeine to get right through to the end. All right. So now that I've ruined the show and brought it to a screeching halt, what are some resources or what are some books or other podcasts that you listen to? So if somebody's newer to libertarian, like what are some things where you're just like reading or listening to it and you're just like, yeah, this is right on.
To be very honest, I'm still trying to catch up on 5 years of We Are Libertarians. So that's been a large part of where I've gotten information from. As I mentioned earlier, now you're going to make me say
Kitty on Liberty. Everybody's going to start calling Kibby Libby.
And then I also read a lot from Fee and from, now I'm going to space on the other publication.
Cato, Reason.
Reason, thank you. Reason and Fee are two that I follow on social media and read a lot of articles from there and take pieces from all of that. So,
not to halt the show again, but Hody just looked at his girlfriend and drug his thumb across his neck in the death motion. What were you? Were you threatening your poor girlfriend in the middle of the show on camera? Did anybody else see that?
I'm actually threatening my dog.
Okay.
He gave a little yap and I'm muted, but I just snapped and did the throat drag thing. And
it was very ominous.
Yeah. I hope the dog got that same message. That's
all I can say. Well, basically, Jeff, what I'm hearing is, Reinhold, he's not read Human Action. He's been a libertarian for 6 months. He's not a real libertarian.
Right. And he's getting all his stuff from that side of the libertarianism.
I know.
The Cato, the Reason.
You're listening to the Loser Club, Jeff.
Not going to Mises.
Yes. Why are you not listening to Dave Smith? You don't even know what we're talking about. I'm just making Reinhold laugh at this point and the 14 people who know anything that's going on.
It's very funny, too. You'd be on the floor.
Yeah. So, Jeff, let's talk about your first question. You wrote in and you had a series of five questions. And so let's just start with the first. You listened to The Path with Adam and that left you with a few more questions. And so what's your first one?
Yeah. First off, Adam took most of my questions that I initially had. So I had to kind of reevaluate.
That's exactly what Levy said. She's like, he had all my questions.
So my first question was, and I jokingly put, in a libertarian utopia, what is policing or how does policing work and what does that look like for major crimes, i.e. murder or theft? And is that done individually? Is it private? Is it, does that break down? How are crimes policed?
So in a libertarian society, when bodies start showing up under Hody's doorstep, then how would we deal with that as a free society? Who would like to take policing in a free society?
There's too many dead dogs on your front porch, Hody.
I will let Hody go
HOA
first.
Hody, go ahead.
I want to say something before we get started.
Okay.
When you say libertarian utopia, you have to understand there's a lot of different libertarian utopians.
Yeah.
Utopias out there. So you kind of have to okay, what are we talking about? Are we talking about an anarchist type of utopia, or a minarchist, or a classical liberal? Or there's a lot of different threads and views on that. So some of the answers you might get here are going to be kind of along those lines of differences, and that's a good thing. So that we have kind of different views on how we could do this.
So Jeff, did what Reinhold just say, did that confuse you? You're like, wait, there's more than one type of libertarianism, or have you followed any of the strains? Like, what did you think about what Reinhold just said?
No, that totally makes sense. And I think it's one of my later questions. One of the things that I wanted to kind of ask in that field of, obviously, if libertarian is a umbrella over multiple different categories, like, how do those come together into a single society? And that, I could be opening a can of worms there, but
have you seen the podcast world of the libertarian movement alone? So let's start with just the pure stateless society. Let's go to our purity expert, Hody Johns. In a pure libertarian society where there is no government whatsoever, some might call it ANCAPism, some might call it agorism, what would policing look like?
There's David Friedman. He wrote a book called The Machinery of Freedom. It's a fantastic book, and it answers a lot of these like hardcore what an anarchist society would look like type of questions. He's very moderate as far as anarchy, as far as an anarchist can be moderate. He's very moderate as far as saying, hey, let's scale back until we get there, as opposed to just setting flags on fire and, you know, and emailing your congressman, you know, your human fecal matter and stuff like that. He's very reasonable. The machinery freedom, he says specifically that if you say you know the answer to this question, you're actually using a cop-out, because it's hard to envision what the market will do. And so he actually provides like 12 different options. And he says, I don't know which one will be best, or probably a combination of them will be best. Let me give you, because I don't want to give you an unsatisfactory answer, I always believe that you should have a good answer and say that this is the floor, right? Because the ceiling could be, the market will demand better, always. Market always wants better. You make ice cream, you understand. Chris, I've heard you talk about crappy ice cream before. There is crappy ice cream on the market, and we demand better, right?
That's exactly right. I want,
oh my gosh,
I want Cold Stone Creamery, I want Ampersand Ice Cream, I want Ben and Jerry's. I don't want Breyers.
Yeah. you don't like flavored ice crystals? Or
no. I don't want your cheap Napoleon ice cream.
Yeah.
But the problem is that Breyers gets bought because there are people who are willing to take less quality for a cheaper price. And that had happened too in that sort of situation.
Right. And so, and that's, I guess that's a great carryover too. And so the issue is you're responsible for your own freedom. Right. And that is always true in any society. You just either choose to outsource it to the government protecting your freedom, or outsource it to your neighbors or to your companies or your business. You always, or in an individualist society, you're responsible, and you're responsible for choosing whether you want your community to take care of it or your business to take care of it. Or, you know, look at something like insurance. Right? You choose your insurance, and you say, I want it really high so that if something does happen, I don't have to be like, I'm not covered for this. Like those warranties that don't work. And in one sense, it's a difficult explanation, because people think that, well, if my right to life is secured, you know, and no one's out there securing it. Yeah. But that person is going to be you. And that's tough for some people to understand. The judicial system will be complicated, but when insurance companies talk to each other, they might have different terms, but they do come to an agreement. Ultimately, they call each other and they talk to each other and they say, hey, look, you and me, we operate differently.
You have like a system. Like, I had a situation today where I called another radio show and I said, listen, we're competitors, but we're also colleagues, and I need some information. And you guys have done this thing before, and I need to know it. And I know that you have no reason to talk to me. And we had a great 30-minute conversation. And at the end, we were like, maybe there's some ways that we could partner together here, right? So even, you know, the other ice cream owners in the store, there's maybe the one bad actor that you're like, yeah, Johnny's ice cream shop, they're suspicious. But the other 15, you kind of get along. So there's some collegiality amongst yourselves. And sometimes that turns into formal organizations where you have either a union or a guild. Or, I mean, I view a lot of other libertarian podcasts, both. I look at Lions of Liberty, and I love all those guys. I think they have an absolutely great show. I promote their show. I also see them as competition because, you know, you only have so much bandwidth. You get seven podcasts on your pod. Most people have seven podcasts on their app. Well, if you have two libertarian podcasts, you might like them better. But at the same time, like, okay, at least we're moving towards the same goal, right? So there doesn't need to be a competitive spirit. You can help each other grow and come together and network together because, frankly, sharing promos on each other's podcasts has made our show stronger because people start to support both. They go, I really like Good Libertarian Podcast, and I'm glad there's two and not just one. I mean, so, Hody, that's kind of what you're saying. It's like, just because there's competition, we sometimes let the anti-capitalist mentality get in the way of this, and we start to think, competition is bad or choice is bad because somebody's going to get hurt or get screwed over because of the bad actors, when in reality, we love competition. It makes everything better, Hody.
It's exactly that. And the thing is, we tend to think competition would lead to too much chaos. We just go in a million different directions because I get the spirit of the question is kind of, well, I believe a judicial system should work this way. Well, I believe a judicial system should work this way. And this is one of those instances where libertarians can let their individualism mess up what kind of actually happens in the market. Great example, restaurants. You don't need somebody to tell you to go visit a restaurant. Or, you know, some people might be like, well, I want the restaurant to come to me. Well, that's not going to happen because there's not a very good market for it. So you might think in your head, I want a judicial system where a judge lives in my house and 18 million people are guarding the door. Well, okay, if the market wants that, then that's going to happen. So the reason we even talk about things like nobody has to mandate that you set up a restaurant.
All right, but Hody,
just pop up.
Hody, the man asked about how you're going to arrest murderers and child rapists, and you're talking about free markets and screeching on about it. So how's your little mysterious market going to actually haul my killer into jail?
Sure. This is one of our favorite enemies of the show. You may remember him well, referred to them as what, Nick Mercenaries, right? You go to McDonald's and if you don't like the pro-choice people, it's the equivalent of getting like an exercise value meal. You just hire a mercenary right there. No, that's piracy. That's crazy. And there's not really a market for it. So the issue is when we talk about markets, let's go ahead and get off of the hypotheticals. Let's stop talking about restaurants because that's the nice way to talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about pedophiles. We're talking about murderers. We want to deal with these people, right? Right. So I don't want to avoid the question.
Hillary Clinton.
We can talk about Hillary Clinton. Oh my gosh, right?
The real evil ones.
Right. How are we going to deal with this? Here's the deal. Let's say there's a market to get rid of pedophiles. I would say that there would be a substantial number of people that want to make sure pedophilia doesn't happen to their children. Right?
Okay, but how do you, let's say you have a vigilante club on meetup.com for killing pedophiles. How do you protect justice, though? How do you protect your vigilante club? Or maybe I'm mischaracterizing it, but that's what leapt to my mind there, Hody. Like, how do you protect the innocent?
So we're assuming, okay, so the vigilante club, how do you protect the vigilante club?
I'm saying like if you have a private corporate, like what are you saying, that there's going to be some sort of private company that takes out or a group of people who have a vested interest in getting rid of pedophiles? Like,
yeah. So we have great examples for this actually in the United States today. There's a few different counties we've talked about on this show before that actually have private police forces. Now, of course, they have a single private police force. This isn't the Ancapistan we want, but they actually provide a really great foundation. When they hired those people, they said, well, these people are going to get a different contract with a different single police force if we don't meet their needs. So what did they start doing? They actually halved, this is on Wikipedia, I'm not making this up. They actually halved their response times on calls. They stopped pulling people over on the side of the road because guess what? That's not popular among the people that you're policing, right? Committing road piracy against those people. What is popular? What was popular? They got their rape kit times down from 30-year processing average times to 3-week processing times. Okay, that's something. All right. And so what this is saying, this is what competition in the market does. Is they don't even have a real competition once they got the contract, but they're not going to get renewed unless they actually police the things that the people care about. What is it that you think most people care about when they hear about this? Hillary Clinton, murderers, pedophiles, bad thieves, that type of thing. And this is, we actually have a very current real example of that happening. And that's just the average of them happening around the country when they're on still government contractual contractions. If this is the free market, how much more do they have to compete? How much harder they have to beat? How much more do they have to work to serve, to stop pedophiles, murderers, Hillary Clintons, Donald Trumps, and all that from popping up and trying to take your stuff? You know, it's really one of those things that we have an example of, and it's scary in theory, but we've seen it in practice, and the practice doesn't match the fear that's in our hearts.
All right, Jeff, what do you think about that?
Yeah, and that's kind of like, I think what my thought would be, and I'm trying to process that a little bit, but yeah, I would assume, and I'm fully behind the idea of privatizing. I think we're taking the question a little bit, and you talked about it in the path with Adam, is what happens when, let's just say, Fresno County has its private that's on contract, and LA County has a different, and somebody leaves Fresno County and goes to LA County, where do you start creating those connections without creating a government that's linking them all together, but still controlling those ultimate different entities?
Harry, do you want to jump in here?
The thing that's been bothering me, like everyone answers this question, is calling a libertarian utopia. Just because a libertarian utopia doesn't mean lack of government. Libertarian, you can still have a government with and still being libertarianism.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Yes, you can. You can have a government. It's
you
okay.
Loser club, no real libertarian having status. What are you talking about? explain what you mean. Because I think people hear that and they think the current government, you're talking about.
You can have a libertarian society and have a government. You can have people that want to come together to want to form a, I don't know, let's call it a government that wants to, like, how do we protect our freedoms from everyone else who wants to infringe on them? We create a governing body to make sure we enforce the laws that we want to respect our area.
Like a homeowners association?
Homeowners association, but if you want to call it an association, a Justice League, or government, whatever it's called, that's what you're doing. And the other thing is, and other government jurisdictions you can have partnerships with, because one, if we have, let's say that LA and Fresno, that you guys want to have a good working relationship with each other, and LA doesn't want thieves and rapists, and Fresno doesn't want those too. If you guys talk to you like, hey, this thief and rapist just went to your town. Can you pick them up for us? Cool. We don't want this guy either. We'll send him back to you.
Yeah. Just like nations, you have Interpol, where you have the International Policing Agency. You have extradition treaties. It's in the best interest of these governing bodies to work together and to coordinate. Here in Indiana, the mayor of Indianapolis, which is roughly 25% of the state's revenue and population, they reached out to all the surrounding counties and said, hey, why don't we pool our money and buy road salt in bulk and buy road signs in bulk? And so that's what they did. And they saved the taxpayer money, taxpayers of all those counties and municipalities, a ton of money, because everybody worked together through a state agency. The difference in what Harry's talking about and what we have now is that you would voluntarily choose to live under the agreements and the laws of Fresno County and LA County in your example, versus you were born into America and Fresno County. Now, you can choose to move from Fresno County to California. It's not a burden, an undue burden, to move from county to county. It is an undue burden to move from the United States to Canada. And so that's why you want to keep government as small as possible, because it keeps it more voluntary. It keeps it more of a choice than what we have now, where you have a large centralized government. And it doesn't matter where you go in the across the United States, you're still under the authority of a large centralized state. And that's the problem. It's it it isn't that government won't exist, because the nature of human organization is that you have the same problems in governments that you have in corporate boardrooms, that you have in nonprofits, that you have in churches. I learned everything about politics in the United Methodist Church when we hired and fired three youth pastors in 3 years. So don't tell me politics doesn't exist in private voluntary organizations. It absolutely does. Politics will not cease, but your choice to participate in it will exist. So does the idea of governing bodies working – Harry, is there anything else that you'd like to add to that before I ask Jeff something?
Oh, I was just – no, you can go ask Jeff. I'll let you
go. Okay. So does that make sense to you, Jeff? Like I pick on the idea of private courts because I'm not totally sold on the idea of the complete and total removal of force. I want to give the if you're going to centralize force, you want it to be as close to the people as humanly possible, and really only around issues of justice and courts specifically. But everything else can usually be done through free markets, and there probably are great arguments that I just haven't read or run into yet, because I'm still, after 15 years learning about libertarianism every day, that will go, I'll go, oh, okay, I get that piece now. But there will be agencies working together. So does that make you feel a little more comfortable? Like, are you like, okay, maybe I could see myself moving into Ancapistan with Harry and Hody?
Yeah, no, that definitely makes more sense. Yeah, I think that definitely does. The other kind of finishing part to that, though, is also, and it leads into my other question.
Well,
is,
hold on there. I want to give Reinhold a chance to jump in, because okay, I know Reinhold has something to say.
Well, so
Reinhold, hold on. Let me ask you a question. Because we tease you about being a communist along with our friend Ryan. You would consider yourself more of a classical liberal than maybe an anarchist or an ANCAP. Is that fair to say? And what does that mean, if so?
Lockean classic liberal, yeah. So that would be the idea that people should be free to live their lives as they choose, as long as they're not violating the rights of others to the same. And it's that second part that a lot of libertarians get tripped up on, mm-hmm. especially anarchists, because they're like, I want to be able to live and do whatever I want to do. But the other part of that is protecting other people to have that same right. And you can't turn a blind eye to that. So with private police, I have no problem necessarily with private police over government police at all. It's been done in the United States for hundreds of years. We used to have a group of people called the Pinkertons, who were a private police force back in the late 1800s, right? So the problem is that the same corruption and the same problems that you have in government infect those private organizations as well. So what you have to do is make sure you have an oversight method. You have a way to protect the innocent. You have a way to protect the people who could be abused by somebody just buying justice, right? You don't want to have the situation in which it's going to crop up a little bit more. It happens in government too, so it's just kind of the same thing, but it's kind of a different form. But you still have people buying their own justice, right? You know, somebody could be completely right in everything in those private courts, but somebody could come in and give somebody a bunch of extra money, and then they get ruled against, right? So you have to kind of keep an eye out for that and have a way to manage that before you can kind of go down that road. And a lot of it also depends upon whether the people in the community are really interested in that kind of view, right? So they have to fight for it. They have to want to protect it. They have to want to protect each other. Even if they disagree with their neighbor, they need to be able to say, I want to protect him, even though I disagree with him, but I want to protect him, his rights, right? So that's kind of where I see the private police, is where it can be better than what we have with government. It could be worse than what we have with government. It's a lot more free, but it's also rife for problems. So I just want to make sure that when we start thinking about that, we go down the road, we're also thinking about those protections that need to be in place.
Jeff, what do you think about that?
I think that's kind of true for myself, where I guess a little caught up on those, and I'm trying to trying to separate government and those protections, or those kind of guiding principles in a sense. I'm still processing that a little bit.
You're good, Harry.
Yeah. I was going to say, and the other thing with the separate entities and how do the punishment work? We already have that now. Certain laws have certain punishments depending on which municipality that you're in. Depending on where you are in the state of Indiana, it's either a crime or a misdemeanor if you shoot a deer while still on your back porch, you know, depending on which county you're in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think ultimately what Ryan Hall was saying is where I'm getting more caught up in that is how do you, the private security makes sense to me. Controlling that to a degree without reproducing what we have as a government now, knowing that corrupt things do happen both in business and nonprofits as they do in government. How do you put those constraints in there without just getting back and circling back to what we already are at?
Which really ties into your second question. So do you want to go ahead and ask that?
Yeah. I'm going to pull it up. And this was going back to your survival of the fittest conversation that you also did with Adam. But how do libertarians avoid the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer through these private organizations running these and controlling different aspects of society? Or not really controlling, but monitoring.
So here is the thing that is hard for people to accept is that we have that now, and we have more government control than ever before, which is partially why we have so much corruption and control by the 1%, the evil 1%. And there isn't going to be a human system of organization, be it a purely economic organization system like the free market or a total political solution like communism or social democratism or whatever you want to call what Bernie Sanders believes. There isn't a perfect solution where everybody's going to be happy. If you have a staff of 10 at Ampersand Ice Cream, there's 11 opinions, you know? And so the problem with trying to centralize government at a higher and higher and higher level that oversees more and more people is you have more and more opinions, and politics plays a bigger factor. And politics is just basically the polite version of warfare for the evolved man. And so, you know, if you want science to be, you don't want science to be politicized, stop making science political. But the reality is that in a free society, there will be poor people, there will be rich people, there will be inequality, just as there is now. But what you have in a free society is less of the resources are being taken and given to a bureaucratic state, an administrative state like we have, that wastes that money at an alarming rate for very few results. And in a free society, in a bureaucratic state like we're heading towards or we exist in now, choices are usually voted on and political considerations are applied. And so things are much more up in the air. It's much harder to get things done through Congress than it is in a boardroom often. So you have a lot more nimbleness and easier time to make choices. And the wonderful thing about a free society is that you always have the ability to convince some rich person that your idea is worth funding. It doesn't matter how crazy your idea is, you can get some nut to do it. Who would have ever thought, you know, Jeff, I'm 36, you look like you're probably somewhere near my age. Would you ever have thought in the early 2000s that there would be two or three private space companies?
No.
No. It's an idea that some crazy billionaires just decided, like, I really like the right stuff and I want to fly on a plane to space and I have stupid money, so I'm going to do it. And so you have the ability to convince. I do a show called Now Hear This, which you can listen to the podcast on the We Are Libertarians Network. But, you know, you're talking to people, and we're not talking about stupid stuff. We're talking about, well, there was one that we just did with the Exotic Feline Rescue Center. It is completely legal to own a lion or a tiger in most states. You can go on right now and you can buy a tiger. And what people do is they buy a tiger because they want to take the Instagram photo with a baby tiger for the social proof. And then that tiger turns 3 months old and is the size of a St. Bernard and has the manners of my house cat. And they're like, shit. And so in 1991, someone in Terre Haute decided to do something about it and opened this big cat rescue center. And they have 150 animals there of people who, in a free society, made a bad choice. And somebody stepped up to take care of those big cats. Or you have the Starfish Initiative, which realized like there's disadvantaged, economically disadvantaged students in usually in rural or urban schools who need somebody in their life to explain to them how to go to college, because they're from families that no one has ever gone to college. And so that's a tremendous amount of disparity in terms of just information. And so these are very bright kids that get into this initiative that get a mentor, usually from a cross-cultural, you know, so if I apply as a mentor, then they're going to give me, the middle-aged white guy, a young black female, most likely, because they want the diversity. They want people to learn from each other. And so, well, that's a very specific idea that is wildly, massively funded by the local big-wig community, the Anthems and the Lilies and the big companies here in town that fund those things. And so very narrow, very specific ideas are constantly funded by people who have money or corporations that is a group of people that have collected their money and are willing to give back to these specific projects. And every single one of these interviews, it's one person saw a need and said, I'm going to organize some activity to solve that need. And then 20 years down the line, they're bringing in millions in revenue that they're then giving to people who have the problem that they're trying to solve. Does the problem always get solved? Is it a perfect system? No. But the need for people to take care of problems will always be there. And so will there be bad actors who will take advantage of the poor, who will take advantage of a private system, who will use it to their advantage? Absolutely. But the vast majority of people, like the people on this call right now, will go, yeah, I saw somebody in need and I had an extra $1,000 a month in revenue because I had spent less on government that wasted that revenue and put it towards some activity that actually solved the problem. And so the concept that is always spun against libertarianism is that it's survival of the fittest. We've got to help people. If we don't do Medicare for all, then people are going to die in the streets. And this system is so cruel and evil. And the reality is that it is cruel and evil to set up a bureaucracy that doesn't help people, because you think that you're doing something compassionate by stealing someone else's money to give them health care that doesn't work to make you feel better, but you're not helping, because the actual solution is to move away the other direction from the way that we've moved over the last 100 years. And so the more choices, the more organizations, the more activity, the more spontaneous order that comes out of a free market system, the harder it is to control. But once you start to centralize everything, and once you start to put all of the power into the presidency or the Congress, then a Michael Bloomberg says, I'm going to spend $2 billion of my money to get control of this lever because it has tremendous power and I can wield that force to however I want. And Hody Johns doesn't have the same ability to do it because he doesn't have $2 billion to build Name ID. He's got a podcast, you know, which is fair Name ID for sure, but it's not $2 billion worth, trust me. And so the reality is that the more that you centralize things and give force, the power of force and government power, the more the easier it is to control. So corruption becomes easier. Am I even close to answering your question?
Yes, you are.
Okay. So if everything is privatized, Hody, Reinhold, Harry, you, whoever wants to go next, I'll open up the floor to you guys. How do we make sure that the poor and the economically disadvantaged have access to services in a free society?
Well, we could.
Let's go with. Let me go with Harry. We'll go with seniority. Harry first, then Reinhold.
Yeah, take that, Reinhold.
Seniority on the podcast, not in life.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Okay, right, that's fine. We'll make sure.
Certainly not based
saving
on
the
attendance.
Best for last.
Oh, yeah. All right. So, just like Spangle said, we would always have poor people. It's a fact of life. Yeah. But one part of our society that does happen, which is part of human nature, is that if we suspect that someone is doing something, we have this bias that we suspect someone doing. That's why one thing they always teach you into like trauma response training is that you point at someone, you tell, hey, you call 911. You do that. You tell someone to do it instead of so like someone call 911, everyone will assume someone else is calling. So you should direct someone to call 911. This is the same way. So if someone, if you see homeless, stuff like that, someone always assume, well, the government's got that because you've outsourced it for so long, or you just assume some other agency has it. They've got it. They've got doing it. But with that all around, you've got to do it. Organizations could see that from themselves. A lot of more churches will have more money in their coffers because people have more to give for their tithe and actually help out their communities on their own and come up with different solutions to help people in need in their own, in their areas, instead of coming with a cookie cutter, Washington DC type of answer that pushes out to everyone, because what works for California or New York probably will not work for Iowa or Wyoming or Indiana. Just like homeless solution here in Indiana, like a lot of issues, a lot of ways to fix homelessness in Indiana does not correlate or work to LA. One, housing here is actually kind of inexpensive. A lot of the issues with the homeless here is drug addiction and the access to mental health, the Wheeler Mission does a great job at that. I think.
Harry, let's look at media. So I'm just sitting here listening to you, and I'm thinking, Jeff gives this podcast. If we had the BBC and we had a centralized media outlet, Winston Churchill in World War II was not allowed to go on British airwaves before World War II, when he wasn't prime minister, and talk about Hitler and the threats of Nazi Germany, because he was not allowed on the British airwaves because it was a centralized power. Now, if you centralized all the podcasts and all the audio content and all the media in the world, would maybe you could go, well, that, well, there's reasons for that, right? But because you have no centralized authority, no centralized power, somebody like me can go, you know what, there's a need in the market for a smart talk show based around independent libertarian ideas. I'm going to do that. I'm going to work really hard at it. And then I bring people along like you guys to participate in it. And then Jeff goes, I really like what they're doing. I'm going to give to them. And what you get is you get 900,000 podcasts giving individual attention and great service at a manageable level, instead of one giant bureaucratic overarching organization that, yeah, they may have some resources to do some cool stuff like NPR does, but try and get a hold of Google. Try to get a hold of YouTube. Try to get a hold of NPR if you want to have a conversation with them. Jeff sent me an email and I said, yeah, man, come on, right? And so healthcare, trash pickup, streetlights, public access, which kind of goes into the next question, like, it's more individualized attention. It's a free market economy allows you to talk to the people that you voluntarily engage with in the way that you can get a hold of your favorite podcaster pretty easily. But try and get a hold of Anderson Cooper. He doesn't see your tweets or read your tweets. Now, are there production advantages to Anderson Cooper's setup versus our little Zoom call here? Sure. But to Jeff, that content is worth something every month. And so that, Harry, that dispersion, that spontaneous order, that emergent order, as we might say, of individuals pursuing their passion, like me, I'm passionate about podcasts and I'm passionate about libertarianism. I merged my two passions and I created something great. And that is an emergent thing, a spontaneous Nobody had to direct me. No central power had to tell me what to do. I didn't walk over to Jeff and put a gun to his head. Jeff, if I put a gun to your head and I said, you're now giving X amount of dollars every year to the We Are Libertarians podcast because everyone needs to hear this. I think everyone needs to hear this, and you seem like a rich guy, so I'm going to take more of your money. How would that make you feel? Would you enjoy supporting We Are Libertarians if that happened?
Every minute of it. No, no.
Tread harder.
Yeah, tread harder, Daddy. So, okay. Reinhold, you're next. How would we give access to everyone and give them services? Well, I think we're kind of morphing into your third question, Jeff. So do you want to go ahead and ask your third question? Then we'll give Reinhold and Hody a chance to answer it, because I think they're going to answer probably what your question is.
Gotcha. And yeah, Chris, you touched on it already, but how do public services, most specifically roads, streetlights, and public access ways, work in a libertarian environment? And I'll give some, like, and to kind of all of these questions, some of the things that I will like tie into like what I see. So Fresno, we're in Central California. We have a lot of like outskirt cities that are much smaller. Some that don't even have their own police force. They use the county police force or highway patrol actually to those areas. And so when I'm thinking about some of these questions, I'm thinking about areas like that, that with even like a county or a, I don't know, like a private entity, most of these outlying cities are impoverished and poor. How do we, like, how does all of that come together to ensure that all of that, without it being more centralized to where the majority or the suburban areas are?
Ryan,
well, I would say in kind of following the vein of what we were just talking about and moving into this one, that it would kind of be done similarly to what is being done now, but in a different form. Because, and what I mean by that is, so government is really just people deciding to do things together, right? That's all government is. So,
and then putting a gun to everyone else's head.
Yeah. And then putting a gun to people who decide that they don't want to be part of it. So like, in order for a law to get put into place, more than half the people have to kind of agree with that law, right? Well, what if those people just got together and did it anyway without the government, right? You'd still take care of it. I live in one of these types of places that you talk about where we don't have a local police. I don't even live in a city of any kind. I live in the county. I don't have a city municipality around me. I have a well instead of, you know, a water company, and I have, we don't have a fire department. We have a volunteer fire department, right? So we take care of ourselves. We take care of our neighbors. We know who our neighbors are because we are in a community together, right? So the biggest problem that's happened in a lot of the cities, and I see this a lot, is that people are paying their taxes and they're passing these laws and saying, okay, we're taking care of everybody through this method. But then there's no reason to go help your neighbor out, because you've already given to help the neighbor out. So you never get to know who your neighbor is. You know, it used to be these little communities, everybody knew each other, right? You knew who the guy across the street was. You knew the guy down the road. You knew all these people were. If somebody needed help, you'd go help them. And you see that today when there's something that happens, people come together and just want to give money and help. Like the recent story about the little kid who was being bullied, you know, the little, there's some questions about it,
but the little person, people, yeah, that the, yeah, that Brad Williams was supporting. Yeah.
Right. But there was people just poured money into that because it was something they cared about. So as long as you care about your neighbors and you get to know who they are and you see that they're in trouble, you go help them. I see that all the time. When I grew up, a great story. When I grew up, we were in it's a small area, and there's two townships of the small school. I think there were 40 people in my graduating class, right? So it's not a big place, but everybody knew each other. And we're in the middle of a basketball game, you know, a high school basketball game, and somebody walks up to the person who's like doing the announcing for the game and says something to him, and they turned off and they said, hey, is anybody from this family or knows his family in the stand somewhere, and the lady screamed because their house is on fire. And over half of that stadium, half the people that were there jumped up and ran, jumped in their cars and went down there and took care of it. Right. And it was just something to see. I mean, you see that and you realize what communities are and what people are, what they can do to help each other. You don't need government to tell you to do this. You don't need a guy with a gun telling you to help your neighbor out. You will help them. So I think government gets in the way and prevents this natural state from happening. Right. So, I mean, that's, I guess that's kind of where I'm going with that, is that I think that it would be better taken care of, because right now we have people who fall off the system. We have people who, you know, depending on who's in power, the political power at the time, they don't get taken care of, or they get taken too much care of. And, you know, the money's embezzled the wrong way and there's no real oversight, because you can't really oversight that. A private company, you can oversight. If they're not doing their job, you get rid of them, get somebody else. A small community could hire a neighboring community to help them and make a deal with them for a small cost that benefits both sides. So there's plenty of ways to take care of this in a non-government form. And I think it works better, because you end up rebuilding that sense of community that seems to be getting lost these days.
Right.
So my turn.
Cody, go ahead.
Cody couldn't wait.
Yeah. I'm chomping at the bit here. After we had to skip section two, I was like, ooh. So you asked specifically five questions. This third question, how do public services work, is the only one that I felt there was like a boom shakalaka answer for, like, the libertarians. Cause like, this is one that actually is pretty well done by the market, that government.
You nerd. Boom shakalaka.
Boom shakalaka.
You're so innocent, yet so not.
So one of the, when you talk about the roads, private versus public, there's really no comparison, including the effectiveness of how they're paid for. And a lot of people think, when they think of roads, they still like, well, who's going to pay for them? And our thought is always, well, it's either the people or the government, which is an embodiment of the people, right? But that's actually incorrect. The oldest stretch of highway in the United States is in Iowa. Shout out to Dale. How you doing in Iowa, buddy? And it is built. It was built by farmers. It was built in 24 hours. Of course, it's been updated and modernized and everything like that. But it was stretched the whole span of the state. Now, why did the farmers build that? Because they wanted you to have access to their food and the things that they supply. And so they actually built it. And this is actually what businesses were doing before government kind of takeover. Was they were like, well, we want a railroad. We want a road. So I guess we'll build it. And then, of course, does that cost still get rolled over into the cost of the goods? Yes. But somebody is paying it regardless, right? And so this is the cheapest way to do it, is when you do it at the source, right? Every time you put in a middleman, you put in another guy who's getting paid. And especially when that middleman is government, we're aware there's a lot of waste. But when you just say, hey, let's do it at the source. I want this road. I want people to get here safely. If it's my road, I'm responsible for it. So I don't want their cars getting dinged up, because then who's going to come get my stuff? Right.
Right.
And then I want it to go to your house. I want it to be as convenient as possible, not only to get to my store, but for you to get back to your home. You know, nobody's going to go to the grocery store if it's, you know, 5 minutes to get there and 800 hours to get home, you know? And so there's things like that just happen. I had a guy on the show, Joe Patchkel, back when we were doing the dailies, and he works for the electric company and says there's whole sections that they aren't allowed to go to federally. And they're like, well, we could light up every house on this block if each one gave us like $5. And they're like, well, we mandate that everybody pays at least $30. And so we're going to limit it to these areas. Hmm. And so there's actually things in place. And this is something going back to your question too, how do we stop the rich from getting richer and the poor to get poorer? You can't stop either one. Somebody's going to be poor is what they want, and people are going to be as rich as they want. Now, I do want to shout out to my lib socks out there. There are absolutely libertarian philosophies where if equality is more important to you than standard of living, it's out there. I would specifically go to Prudhomme, the philosophy of poverty. He was a non-government, but equality was the most important thing. And you can build that society if you want. If you say, I'm willing to sacrifice a lot of these quality of life things to make sure that everybody is equal intellectually, as long as other people value that, then there's a market for it. Even if it's small, there's a market for it, because you can meet people and build it and decide to build an you know, a society where that's there. Now, I don't want to get into brutalism because capitalism is very, very good for poor people. Now, I'm going to speak as a capitalist because that's what I am. I don't want to misconstrue a libertarian socialist thing. And so maybe it's something for a different person to ask. But let me give you the kind of the capitalist
answer.
Call
the loser club.
The loser club. Yeah, I am proudly not part of that loser club. I kind of wish I was because I don't like the people dunking on them right now. But I'm a capitalist, unfortunately. The thing about the rich getting richer is it doesn't actually – that's not what makes the poor poorer. The idea that wealth comes at the expense of poor people is incorrect. Something that you look at when they're at kind of the fall of feudalism when we had anarchy for a little bit, you saw what happened to the rich who were wearing the silks. There was a limited market for it. But within 20 years, pretty much everybody was wearing silk after – you know, after these kings and lords were like, well, I guess you're allowed to trade with whoever you want now. Everybody's wearing silk. So what did those guys move on to? Well, they started looking at cottons and denims and starting going up above there. So what happened is the rich were still one step above in areas. Tulips is another great example. And there was a really expensive at first, and a poor person could never afford a tulip. But within 10 years, poor person can pull them like weeds from their front yard, right? And so there's a buffer behind. What happens, this is true for socialists and capitalists. I'll wrap it up real quick. Socialists and capitalists alike. What happens in an unregulated market, it generates to excess. What you know about supply and demand, when there's an excess, there's too much supply, there's not enough demand, something will become cheaper. So if the market wants to generate something to excess, right, like cotton or tulips or whatever it may be, that means eventually it will be free or cheap, right? This is true of housing. This is true in food. We here in America, don't know if you knew this, we actually destroy about 50% of our raisin and grape supply to keep it artificially expensive. It's cartel. There's a big Cato. Cato actually is dealing with the litigation. They do podcasts about it, but you can read about it there. But to keep food more expensive, we actually have to destroy some of it because we have too much of it. And what happens is if it becomes cheap, that's bad for government economy because they don't spend as much. And it doesn't look like the economy is big. But for your average poor person, if grapes are and raisins are supposed to be free, I mean, you can't tell me that doesn't help them. If you're telling me that clothing could basically be free if we didn't create these artificial constraints, you know, that's the problem with the central is these rich class will buy out of government and make them do things that benefit them and consolidate them. You take that out of the way and they've lost their authority in order to make what the market wants to do, which is take all these luxuries and make them cheap. There you go.
All right, Jeff, does that clear up those two questions for you? Or do you have more based around those specific questions?
No, I think that clarifies things for me.
All right, good. So I'm hoping somebody has an answer to number four because I don't know. Go ahead and ask number four.
Number four was how does currency/central banking work? Is gold the standard? Is cryptocurrency the answer?
All right, the nerd caucus is lining up to answer. Harry is rubbing his hands
all
together.
Excited over there, biting at the bit.
Bitcoin. Go ahead, Harry. What's your answer? You should unmute yourself. This is like your 150th episode. You're freaking kidding me, man. You still have it muted. What are you doing? For God's sake.
All right, so.
There you go.
Jeff, would you like to be a co-host? There's an opening immediately. Go ahead, Harry.
Personally, that's the beauty about like a libertarian or other society or just the market. You can have multiple currencies. It's okay. If you want to have that central bank fiat currency over in the corner, you can have that. If you want to have a gold-backed currency, you can have that too. If you want cryptocurrency, you can have that too. You can have any version of cryptocurrency.
Harry, and maybe if you can't answer this, somebody else can. But let's get really fundamental and just like, why do we have a problem with fiat currency? And what does that even mean? Because I think that term probably is going over Jeff's head a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah, he's shaking his head yes. Jeff, have you ever heard the word fiat other than in reference to a car?
No, I have not.
Okay, so let's explain that concept. Like, why do libertarians have a problem with paper money?
Ron Paul told us so.
That's a fair statement.
Done, I totally get it now.
Yeah.
I'm good. Yeah. Thank you.
So currency, is supposed to represent products and services.
That's Hody talking.
And it's fiat if it doesn't. Essentially, if it just represents the worth of the money that the government says it is. Basically, it's taking somebody's word for it as opposed to it being representative product and services. Sorry, go ahead, Harry.
Right. So money backed by gold is different than money backed by, we promise this money's good.
Yeah.
So, correct. All right, Harry, go ahead.
Yeah, we promise the money is good. If you don't take it, we have men with guns and we will force anyone to take it or make sure that you'll just have some sort of regime change if you wanted to use some other currency. No petrol dollars, please. All right. And then so the gold standard gets brought up because a lot of people like gold-backed currencies because the idea that gold has never been worth nothing, just like Microsoft stock. But that's all based off like a, you know, there's a lot of different things that haven't been worth nothing before. And gold, while it's a good currency, there's not enough gold to go around for everything, so things are valued different ways. That's why, and it's also hard to transfer hard gold. So that's why promissory notes get set up for gold sitting in a bank. Beauty of cryptocurrency is that it's hard to, you can't really inflate or turn cryptocurrency into fiat because it's basically got worth of what the network has works. There's only so many freaking coins. You can make tons of different ones. That's the other good thing about a lot of cryptocurrency. If they're built on a blockchain, let's call it cryptocurrency or just blockchain or technology built on a blockchain, like a currency built on a blockchain, is that it can't be, it's hard for a central government can have their own cryptocurrency. They can have their own, they can try to deal with stuff with it, but the idea is you can also have other currencies outside that system. And that's the beauty of it. So you allow the market to decide what currency they want to use and what they want to use it for. Some people, if you just want to deal with Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash or Dash, or you want to use some sort of like dark coin or just Doge, you just want to deal in Doge. And then if you want to switch back to like greenbacks, or me personally, I only trade with Reinhold and Bluebacks, you know.
Like, are you feeling more confident in a free society now that you don't know what the fuck he's talking about with any of you? Like, people have to understand the common principle. Like, I guess they believe in fiat currency, even though they don't understand the basic, you know. I was in an argument about Medicare for All recently on the pat down, and they're like, just print more money. I'm like, oh, you were just complaining about the increasing cost of medical care, but you don't care about inflation. So, like, that's, I think, Harry, one criticism of your crypto future is that people don't quite understand. They hear Dogecoin and they just think of memes and it's sort of like not serious. And so it's like, I don't get what blockchain even is. So don't you see that as kind of like a barrier to it moving forward and being implemented?
No, I don't see that as a barrier. Some things, there's some things out there just won't have a grandma just button. Just won't. And it's more because the things that have a grandma just button are insecure and sometimes crap. It's just what it is. The idea of currency is the thing is it's just what you trade for goods and services. It gets us outside of the barter system because if I want, you know, Spangle to make me coffee and the only thing I got to trade with him is my labor on the podcast or blueberries, well, I'll tell you right now, he only eats so many blueberries. You know, so but it's easier to trade it with, you know, greenbacks, you know, like, hey, can I, you know, make sure you buy me coffee, don't drink it all, and, you know, or put it all in his pre-workout. You know, but that's all. And all cryptocurrency is just that in a digital math form. So instead of it being physical in front of you, which you can do if you form a paper wallet, which is risky and hard. It's not hard to do. It's just risky because now it's paper. But so. All right. Got to hit myself on that one. All right. So,
Jeff, is any of the are you following? Are you tracking Harry or do you have more questions? Like, is he like the crypto stuff? Do you just go, huh?
I'm a little on the crypto thing, but I get the concept of, yeah. And I understand the concept of like goods and services being exchanged and going back to that like core belief. But yeah, so I guess I just trying to figure out how that translates to common present times.
Okay. How about this? Let's take it to an internet marketplace. Right now, let's say you have an internet marketplace and you're selling your ice cream on the internet, right? Let's say you have a revolution where you can just pack it, ship it, give it to FedEx, send it anywhere else in the world, right? So now you're having to deal with people from other world. Are you going to not sell someone in the EU because they just have euros? yep, you're going to go through a money exchanger, exchange it to the currency that you want. You're just going to take it, and accept it. So it's like that. And then you've got, so if the world currencies you've got out there that you can trade in and for your own goods or services that you create. Now, what it does is that competition market makes so certain people, certain, let's say, state actors don't artificial devalue or artificially value their currencies. You make sure they don't artificially inflate or deflate their currencies. Because it won't be, you know, it's hard to trade it on the world stage. Either no one wants to take it, or you make it so everybody wants to take it. So that's why everyone wants to take the U.S. greenback, because, you know, it's, and why it's a world reserve currency, because everybody wants it.
Yeah.
They believe into its safe securities that this dollar will always remain a dollar, you know, just about whatever happens.
Let's go to Reinhold next.
We haven't talked to our buddy in a while.
So just kind of get into this a little bit. At a more basic level for me to kind of start with, the idea of currency, the idea of having something that we use to as a placeholder, right? So if I've got a bunch of goods and you've got some services and we want to trade them, I may not need your exact services, but somebody else does. So I can use this placeholder to say, okay, this is kind of worth this. We agree on what this is worth.
And it's that's an efficiency
all
move.
These different.
Yeah, it's an efficient way to kind of supercharge things, you know. So you're exchanging 15 hours of labor for that turnip, as opposed to I worked 1 hour for one turnip and 2 hours for two turnips.
Right, and so this allows the society to kind of exchange goods and services in a more efficient way. And all of these things we're talking about, whether it's paper currency, whether it's gold, whether it's cryptocurrency, all of these are all the same in that regard, that they are just placeholders. And we have to their value is only as much as we agree that it is. So I have to agree that it's this much, and you have to agree that it's this much, and this other person has to agree to that in order for it to work, right? So I think in a libertarian society, how that happens is going to work itself out one way or the other. People are going to agree to use this, or they're going to agree to use that. And there's going to be different options, right? So you're going to have different states or different communities primarily using a different type of currency than maybe another state or whatever. But then you just have exchanges set up, right? So you can have exchanges to take care of that, like we do between the United States and Russia or Vietnam or something like that. When we want to exchange money, we just... we agree on the value based off of the different currencies we're using, and we can exchange back and forth. So just like in the marketplace of other things, in the marketplace of currency, what people feel is the best currency is going to end up winning out, as long as people still feel confident in it until the time that they don't, and it goes away and people start using something else. That's pretty much it for me on that. So
that's all I got to say about that.
I'm not a, you know, like, I know Hody's very, very much more into the economics and Harry both too on that sort of thing. I just know that a lot of times we talk about this stuff in a really deep way, and we kind of argue over the cryptocurrencies, over whether we have gold standards and the Fed and all that stuff. But really it all comes down to, what are we going to agree to use? As long as a value is assigned to it and we agree to it, that's what'll work.
Yeah. Jeff, any comments or questions? I want to make sure you feel free to jump in if you hear something you're like, hey, can you clarify that? You know, but I know people don't feel comfortable, so I always try to give you an opportunity. So
I have no problem jumping in. Right. So yeah, right. No, it's clear.
All right. Hody, anything you'd like to say about this?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. He's humble, this guy Reinhold over here, but really you don't have to be a mastermind to understand that it's good for competition is great in all things. And that includes currency. It's hard for us. It's hard for me to get through my head that there would be competing currencies. And I say, oh, this is just going to be a pain, and there's going to be exchange rates and all this stuff. I got a real good solution here. When I saw this question, there's this thing, it's called "What is free banking and why is it important?" It's from Learn Liberty. It's a 3-minute and 22-second video, real quick, and will make most people who are concerned about it feel very excited for it, as well as comfortable with the concept. You know, basically what you're trying to do is to say, this good represents this, this represents this service. Harry and I might disagree a little bit. I think crypto is way, way better than fiat currency. I don't even want to try to lump them in the same. I don't really like the idea that it's mined information that's not a, it's still not like a product or service. I don't even really like the gold standard because it's like, well, you actually have to value gold as something. And I could just say, well, it's just a rock, you know, and they say, well, we always got to deal with something, right? And societies have always dealt with something. The theory though, and what something, what we started to do before central banking actually stopped this, and this is actually in a global movement. It happened, it was happening in like Scotland as well as America before central banking came along, is banks would exchange your goods for money and say, okay, well, you know, you want something more flexible. That's a market demand. We want to be able to say, hey, I have 100 shoes, but I can't eat 100 shoes. I can't ride to work on 100 shoes. I need to be able to spend it in ways that can turn it into food and things like that. And so a bank would exchange it. Now, the way the banks kept each other honest is because they were responsible for their own notes. And so a bank would say, well, I'm only, if you want to change your bills into stuff here, those guys give way too much money for shoes, or they give way too few money for shoes. So you can always convert it into a more valuable currency from a different bank. And it actually was the same looking dollar bill, but where you got that printed out was very different. For those who want to say that capitalism always ends in monopoly, this is actually a great counterpoint, because the more banks we got, it actually expanded. The more it actually expanded more options, because people wanted to say, well, I want better value on shoes. I want better rates on my car or gasoline or something like that. And so there were always these cropping up that were like, hey, we'll give you the best rate on this, that, and the other. And it, and the more society advanced, the more these banks came to be and the more these notes competed. And yeah, it was just a good time. There you go.
Yeah. One book that I would recommend that really was very helpful in this area is Peter Schiff's How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. And Peter Schiff is a great economist.
Beautiful.
Don't
cry about it, Chris.
His brother, I think his brother Andrew is his name, is infected by
emotional over community. And now we're seeing him get emotional over economics.
Exactly right. But Chard Reed at Plainfield, when he was the business teacher, used to use this as an economics textbook for kids. It's great. But I highly recommend it because it really does kind of speak to this in a very, and you can see if you're watching the YouTube or the Zoom, it's got all kinds of pictures. It's like really well illustrated. I read in like 2 hours. Yeah. So I've been thinking about rereading it. So I'll just put this over here. So, So, does that answer your question? This is a very complicated topic, so I don't know that we can fully flesh this out in just a few minutes, but hopefully you have a little bit more clarity. Any other questions or thoughts on that?
No, I think that, I mean, it's what I have processed in my mind, and obviously I understand the concept of goods for goods, and so I think a lot of that makes sense to me.
Awesome. So let us go to your
before we go.
Oh, go ahead, Reinhold.
Well, I just want one more thing is because you kind of mentioned a little bit about asking about a central bank and that sort of thing. There's a great documentary called Money for Nothing Inside the Federal Reserve. I'd recommend reading it or watching that. It's just a wonderful documentary. It details kind of the history of the Federal Reserve, how it got to where it's at now, and why it was kind of the reason why we had the big crisis in 2008. So
very good. Cool. All right, let's go to your final question. What is it?
So I think, and my final question comes from this, is that I think the more I've learned about libertarianism and kind of knowing where our society is now, and also talking to a lot of people about their political views that I don't want to say that aligns specifically with me, but knowing what people are looking for in society, what does it take for the Libertarian Party to come together and make
it? I'm sorry, no, you're serious. Okay.
I'm probably asking an impossible question here. But like where, obviously, as we've talked about, there's a lot of different viewpoints. There's a large umbrella in the Libertarian Party, from minarchist to anarchist to anarcho-capitalist. How do we at least move the dial in the right direction and come together as a party to take this opportunity right now where we're in a society that, like, I think a lot of people, and I will say that what really brought me into libertarianism is that I was a belief for open borders. I believe that our country is here for immigrants. And then on the flip side of that, I believe that capitalism should exist and it's what's best for our society, and nonprofits need to step in and take care of people, and a society in that way without a government mandating or controlling those type of things is better for everyone. And I think 90% of our population in the United States right now would probably agree with that, at least from my viewpoint. Now, I have a California viewpoint, so maybe it's people around me. But how do we as a party come together to take this opportunity where I think nobody really believes in either side of the aisle, as far as Democrat or Republican, and at least get a message that can be palatable to the general public and start the process down that way? To a more libertarian society.
So I'll take this one first, and then you guys can jump in after I've given my monologue, okay? I think, and you tell me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but I think the We Are Libertarians approach of people first is incredibly important, because I think that the idea that we're here, we're not trying to push a political party or a political figure. We're not here trying to push abstract ideas. We're not trying to push economics. And I don't have any problem with people who kind of like that's their lead, that's their passion. You know, somebody who may do a show or may be like a person who's a devoted follower of the Mises Institute. What tickles their fancy is economics, and that's never really been something that I know a ton about. And it, you know, I'm reading Thomas Sowell's Basic Economics right now and Milton Friedman's Capital and Freedom, and I'm like rereading the same things. I just don't have that brain, right? But I have a people-oriented brain, which is, I think, it's one reason like why Reinhold and I get along is we understand politics and we understand people and we enjoy talking about that and we enjoy the games of it and we enjoy the, you know, that aspect. I was thinking of that today about Reinhold. I was like, you know, what he really gets in what I think most of the hosts gets, like Hody and Harry and everybody that contributes, is like, and Ryan, like, I, if you go back and listen to my Path episode with Ryan, it's like, I don't agree with him on several different things, but he's people first. And that's what's really important, is that you know, when I'm on the pat down, and we just did an episode arguing for our patrons about Medicare for All, and like they wanted to push me into the camp of it's all about money and it's just greed that you can't say you can't afford it because that's greedy. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. It has nothing to do with money, because I don't generally care about money. I'd be probably a lot spammier with We Are Libertarians and do more of the pyramid scheme stuff than I do. It's about people like Jeff who listen to this program and go, man, I connect with that. Well, Jeff, why do you think you connect with We Are Libertarians? What is it about us versus other libertarian outlets that you connect with? What have you thought about that on that level?
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head that it's about the people. And I'm kind of asking this question, like, I have my answer obviously for how this moves forward. And so I'm kind of just putting that out there as like, where, like, to get other viewpoints, then ultimately where can we take that? Cause I think I look at it as, especially where we're at now. And I think Chris, you take it the same way of evangelizing. If you're like fire and brimstone, people aren't attracted to that. But if you come alongside people and create relationships with them and build a trust in yourself, then you do that. And what I see a lot from the Libertarian Party is not that. It's funny hats, big ties, you know,
yeah,
wearing a boot on your head, those type of things, and saying, you know, everything needs to burn down. I mean, even if I go back to music that I've listened to, like anarcho punk rock that I used to listen to in high school, like even that is very, for being a non-aggressive party, are very aggressive towards those things. And like, you know, and so how do we ease people into that direction and have them understand that? Because I think a lot of people would really probably fall in line with a lot of the ideals if it was approached a different way.
Yeah, and so I think where I've developed this is just my Christian beliefs are a huge part of it. I think if you have to take interest in the welfare of the person that's in front of you, and how do you scale that? And second has been in politics, reporting and media, and just talking to people. That's why we did and still would like to do more of the cost series. Just look at our RSS feed for the word cost. Once you hear how people are affected by public policy in a significant way, you go, this is not empathetic. This is not caring. This is not loving. It's cruel and it's harsh and it takes a lot of money to fight it. Unlike in a free society, in a free market. And I think when you start to couch things in, this is not me trying to get over on you. This is not me trying to sell you something that is in my best interest. This is not me trying to scam you to vote for my candidate. This is literally just me going, I see people getting hurt with government and I want to stop that. And people go, okay, I don't agree with your solution. Just like the conversation about Medicare for All, it's like they don't agree with my solution, but they kind of started to. Because they were like, okay, I sort of see how, because in the conversation, they were like, you know, we got to care about people. We got all the same stuff you hear from people who are, you know, more Bernie supporting folks or Democrats about Medicare for All and the same sort of things that you see on a daily basis. And they're like, but, you know, these billionaires should get one yacht instead of two. And it's like, it's not about that. Like, the reality is that if you had a free market healthcare system, empathy is empowered. Where one of the co-hosts told a story about, you know, being in a car and with her dad, and basically said, you know, he didn't have insulin and we couldn't afford the insulin shot, and the druggist gave them his prescription to save his life. And I'm like, that's an example of that one-on-one personal interaction where empathy took over. And the system didn't matter because there was a hurting human being in front of them. Now, how do we do more of that? Because a government agency that's only open 9 to 5 isn't in the drugstore, and you're not able to get a hold of them to figure this stuff out. And really, neither are you with giant multinational corporations. So let's tip that over to the other side. So how do we start to scale this down in a lot of ways? And try to find ways, and I view that the same way with politics and media. How do you support independence, and how do you support close conversations? You know, and it begins with you starting to invite that into your life, and that begins with you being comfortable with yourself. And I joke about my own insecurities, and I joke about that, a lot of that stuff, but I'm not afraid to come in front of this audience and say, I'm a human being, I've gone to therapy, I struggle with these things. And some of those episodes are always the ones where people write in and go, man, thank you so much, I've been thinking that and I felt so alone, you know. And so the more we kind of are putting ourselves out there and taking little risks to talk to people and talk to people in a way that isn't hostile, that I just don't engage in debates. Like, if somebody is trying to trick me, if somebody's trying to trap me, if somebody's trying to be hostile, I don't have time for it. I'm an adult. But if you have a question, if Jeff comes to me and has a question, then I'm going to talk to you about it. But if you want to come and you want to argue and call me a Trumpitarian or a liberal loser clubtarian, like, I just don't have time for that. Like, I want to get along with everybody. And, you know, my interest is in just loving someone in front of me. And I think you'll be a much more successful human being if you really start with, I'm not trying to sell you on anything. I'm trying to understand you. And then I want you to understand me. And then how can we kind of get to the middle? Like, I don't think I changed their minds on Medicare for All, and they're not going to change my minds. That's fine. But at least they walk away knowing, I don't believe what I believe because I want to hurt people or steal stuff from them. They now understand that I believe what I believe because I don't think that it's the most caring and empathetic system to have centralized healthcare, right? And so, but I had to put myself in that situation. I had to make the choice to be uncomfortable and have that conversation. And secondly, I had to study. I had to have points. So when the conversation that we didn't prepare for, it just came up, I had points. So I'm not just sitting there kind of going, because it's easy to make the, Like in the case of Medicare for All, it's easy to make those points. Like if we need government to be empathetic, it's like, but it's hard to make the opposite side because it's not fashionable. And so, you know, first, choose to make yourself uncomfortable. Choose to put yourself out there. Second, study, pay attention, learn. But the reality and the answer to your question, it is you have to do something. You, listener, have to take part in something. It isn't those other guys need to behave. You know, the fakeitarians, they need to behave. Oh, the Mises Caucus, they need to behave. Like, I don't get into all that. Like, the reality is all I can do is control myself and make sure that I'm inviting everybody on We Are Libertarians. And if they come on, they're respectful and nice people. And if they have said something that is problematic, challenge them on it. Give them a chance to explain themselves. Try to understand why would they take that position. I just think that open dialogue ends up being healthier in the long run for the movement and healthier in the long run for human beings. Harry, you've kind of been leaning in. What do you have to say? How do we fix the movement? How do we make it better?
Well, I know one thing that will not fix the movement. That is what violence. Violence is always just going to draw people apart, so like that. So a lot of the big igloo memes, why they be funny, no one really wants that. And poking that and making that come on, that's just going to draw more people away from any type of movement. Now it'll be funny. I laugh at those jokes and created some of those memes. But as I always know, that violence is never the answer. So I think remaining peaceful, trying to what Spengler said is just trying to talk and talk with people and give someone a reason to join up and actually be, and then for once, just, you know, just try to form a sense of community. We, you know, on Friday nights for Liberty and Chill, where the, you know, myself and a group of walnuts, we slowly but surely have been, you know, talking to like just hardcore card carrying socialists who come every Friday to our events, and they understand our point of view, we understand theirs. They, you know, even some things where they've brought up where they've got like, this is a hard belief that they have. And I explained to them how I believe what they just said is the most racist thing I've ever heard all year. And, you know, and this belief, why try to figure out why they have these beliefs and these sayings. It's just because they believe they're doing a right thing for minorities. When I'm basically like, no, that's outright racist because you think so little of them. But I didn't like accost him. I didn't attack him. Didn't befriend him or kick him from the table. We had this conversation. We had a talk, and I think that's what one thing with a lot of libertarians or people in the liberty space have is some. As much as we love to talk, we like to, for some reason, like to talk with only our end crowd. And when someone says something that's, you know, unbecoming of our special flavor of liberty, we don't want to talk to them. There's multiple paths to liberty, and it's a good thing. We are competing things of liberty. And it's a great thing. These are beautiful, awesome, amazing things. You know, it's amazing, you know, like, just like with Porkfest, when someone created Forkfest for the weekend prior because they felt something was different at Porkfest. Did they, you know, scoff and try to go after, you know, some people did, but eventually they just embraced each other and, you know, it almost just became its own 2-week festival. It's amazing, you know, so.
Yeah. I think that's, choosing not to fight. I always have it kind of engaged in the fights, and it's fun, and it's, you know, I'll do the fights if it's pro wrestling. If everybody's kind of in on it,
yeah,
then it's kind of fun. But like, I don't do the fights anymore where it's like, you know, serious. I don't have the energy for that. Reinhold, thoughts on how we can save the liberty movement?
Well, okay, so there's two different things. First, there's the Libertarian Party, and then there's the Libertarian Movement.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's really kind of two ways to think about this, right? But really, what you want to do, if the main goal is to advance liberty, then that can only be done by going out and advancing liberty. And I'm not talking about going out and being like Jehovah's Witnesses and knocking on doors and trying to convert people. It's by going out and doing it. Like if we say that there, we think that private organizations would run this better or provide healthcare better, then get together with a bunch of people, start a private organization and go do it. You don't need the government's permission to do that. You don't need to worry about the competition with the government. Just go and do it. And once people see that it's working, they're going to question, why are we paying money, tax money, into the system when we've already got it taken care of over here? The great example I've always used is the Underwriters Laboratories, right? So UL is a private organization. They put together sets of standards on how to have electrical equipment, make sure electrical equipment is safe, and everybody submits their stuff to them because people want to buy stuff that's been UL tested. So we don't have a federal organization for electronics like we do the Federal Drug Administration. You know, we don't have the FDA in that area. We could put together something to start doing something like that to replace the FDA, and eventually the FDA won't be needed anymore. We can do that for education. We can do that for all these different things by going out there and just making that impact and doing it. Then I think that's really the key there, because then people start seeing that it's working. The same thing goes with the party. You still have to have a political party. You still have to try to get involved in government and try to direct government to be at least a little less authoritarian than it is.
Yeah.
Right. So we want to try and get there, but there's two different ways of doing it. And the party needs to embrace both. We get into this tired argument about, well, we shouldn't be doing national stuff. We should be focusing on local. And other people saying, no, we have to do national because that's how you get the information out there to the most people. And it's really both. You have to do local races. You have to affect change in your communities, right? That's how you succeed there. But you also have to have the national presence for people to realize that this is a party to be reckoned with. Right now, with everything being so divisive, libertarians are actually the ones making the decisions on who gets elected, right? You have so many close elections now that the 1 or 2 or 3 or 4% that the libertarian person can get can swing an election. So the candidates have to start saying, we need to pay attention to these people and start doing what they want a little bit, right? So that's how you start affecting change that way. And people start seeing that those things that you're calling for start to work, they're going to give you the opportunity to implement that on a larger scale later on. But you have to prove it. You're not going to be able to win an election overnight, go in and just dismantle government that next day. I see that being stated by, like, Kokesh says that on national TV, and everybody laughs at him because that's not going to happen. It's not how it's going to work. So the problem with the Libertarian Party right now is it's still a little bit too small. So you still have a lot of egos that are in there trying to be the big fish in the small pond, and they're doing all kind of, they believe that this should be, and they believe with all their heart, and I'm glad that they're there working and fighting for it, but we need more people in there, because once you have more people in there, the quality will rise, the cream will come to the top, and we'll get the better candidates out there for that.
Yeah.
So that's how you change it. You just keep growing, you keep pushing your ideas, you move forward, and you enact the change that you want to have enacted.
Hody?
Can I throw something out real quick?
Absolutely. It's your show.
And to kind of build off what Reinhold said, and like kind of the direction where they go with this is, so when you say that, like, you know, I think what I'm looking at is, how do we rein in those candidates without force that are going on national TV and saying, under the libertarian name, if I get elected president tomorrow, I'm going to just rip that whole government down, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do it this way, because to the general public, that doesn't work. And then it establishes that name for libertarians. Like, you know, and I've had those conversations where I'm like, oh, I'm a libertarian. And they're like, oh, so you just want to rip the whole government apart? And I'm like, well, no, because I think that's a process that we get to. And I'm like, oh, I heard this libertarian talking on this national news thing, and that's how they said that they're going to do it. And so how do we rein that in? And obviously we're just,
there's two things to that. First of all, the answer to that is, yeah. And you've got the Democrats throwing a socialist up there, and you've got the Republicans with Trump. Yeah. So, how is this any worse than that? Right. But the second one is just say, hey, libertarian is a widening range of views and thoughts. And you're going to have some people who are kind of fringy and who say things are a little out there. But listen to what, so I always say libertarian is ism is, and I've said it before in the podcast tonight, is that it's people have the right to live their lives as they choose, as long as they're not affecting someone else's right to the same. And when you tell somebody that and you say, hey, this is what I believe, and you just give them that straight sentence, five times out of six, they're going to say, yeah, I believe that's what I believe too. All right. But what happens is when you start saying, well, what about this, and applying that to it, they go, well, you know, I think it there, we need to kind of go around it. So, but once you establish that that's the view, which is really an American view, it's what the basis of this government was founded on. It's Jefferson was the one that said this based off what Locke was explaining in his philosophy, right? That's how old this goes back to. In his first inauguration speech, he basically says that exact line, right? So once we agree that that should be the philosophy that we filter our politics through, I think a lot of people are more going, okay, I could see that, but you just interpret it a different way. Or you see this kind of how this applies a different way to different aspects or different issues. But I mean, I think that's really the only way to do that. You can't tell somebody, they can't go on TV and say what they want to say. All you can do is have more voices out there and more better people drowning out those fringes.
Yeah, I think that's we have this conversation all the time in the group chat because it's complicated. Like, libertarians are tied to other libertarians in a way that is unfair compared to Republicans and Democrats. And people have a standard for us that they don't apply to other people. Amy Klobuchar didn't know the name of this Mexican ambassador, and it didn't end her presidential campaign in the way that it ended Gary Johnson's in the mind of many people. You have the James Weeks dancing on stage naked incident brought up to you 150 times a week if you're talking about libertarianism on Facebook. I have just gotten to a point with some of that stuff where I just, not hostily, but I push back and I just say, are you a mental midget? All right, maybe that's hostile. But are you, like, do you have a low IQ? All right, maybe I'm still wrong. Like, when somebody when somebody brings up James Weeks, I just know that's a dumb person. Like, you're just not interested in having a real debate or having a conversation, or you're not interested in anything I have to say. You're interested in just protecting your tribe and mocking mine. Okay, let's do that then, because I'm a professional communicator and I work for a comedy show and I will wreck you. There's just like some, you have to at a certain point go, yes, every group of people has infighting. The Vatican has infighting, and they think that they're the literal voice of God. You know, there is any group of people has infighting. And if you are so unsophisticated and immature that you can't see the ideas because you're turned off by the arguing, then you're the problem, not the people who are fighting. Like, yes. Stop making apologies for other libertarians. You don't have to own that. You don't have to take responsibility for that. It's ridiculous if you do, because it's not about you. It's about other people. Like, we take too many opportunities to apologize for other libertarians because we have this complex in the libertarian movement where we need people to like us. I don't know Lincoln Chafee from Adam. I have not studied him. I don't know if I'd vote for him or not. I mean, I'm just going to go out on a limb that Lincoln Chafee versus Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump. I'm probably taking Lincoln Chafee, right? But what was I talking about? Total brain fart because I messed up Donald Trump's name and then I started thinking about that and now I have no idea what I was talking about. What was I talking about? Help me.
Kibbe on Libby. That's what you were.
Kibbe on Libby. About. Yes.
You're talking about people and it's all about the people, right?
Right. Like
making excuses to not be libertarians.
Yep. Yeah.
Why we're a joke.
Don't apologize to those people for those people because you don't have to.
Right.
You know, if you study Lincoln Chafee and you like Lincoln Chafee and the fashionable thing in the libertarian movement is to not support Lincoln Chafee, then support Lincoln Chafee and grow a pair and create the lane for Lincoln Chafee supporters. the people, and that's what I've actively chosen to do with Gary Johnson. If you think Gary Johnson was a bad candidate in 2016, there are some arguments that he didn't run a good campaign or he wasn't prepared to be president. I've made those arguments. But if you think that his campaign was a failure, then I'd like you to fly to the state conventions of the libertarian parties that are going to have ballot access for the first time in their history because he got 3% instead of 1%. You're just a bona fide idiot if you don't think that that's a success. And at a certain point, you have to grow up if you're making those arguments. If you're making the James Weeks argument, oh, you're not serious because they dance naked on stage, you're grow up. Like, and don't be afraid to push back at people, because create the lane. And don't be afraid to be the person. If you have trouble creating that lane, go read Braving the Wilderness by Brené Brown, and it will help you. It's all about standing up for what you believe in. If you think Jacob Hornberger or Vermin Supreme or Lincoln Chafee's the best person, say it. People, like, that's one thing that Miss Pat has taught me on the Pat Down, is that people want you to tell them what you think instead of trying to be liked. And this party is so desperate. That was my point about Lincoln Chafee. They'll pick Bob Barr or Gary Johnson or Lincoln Chafee or some other party's retreads, not because he's the best candidate or because he's the most ideological, because he'll get the best media coverage. And the political establishment might take us a little more seriously and might like us a little more. And that's where the criticisms of Gary Johnson are right. Why choose another old white dude with who's milquetoast, who's going to get us like, ugh. I get it. I totally get that argument. Because the Libertarian Party is a lot like the Republican Party, and they're desperate to be liked. We got Chuck Norris. Who? Charlie Daniels likes us. We should make him like, ooh, Vince Vaughn is saying nice things. Oh, shut up. Grow up. Like, Republicans and Democrats have this like inferiority complex where they do stupid stuff because they think that they're going to be liked by the media and liberals and Hollywood, and it's not going to happen. The universities are never going to fully support libertarian ideas. Sorry, they'll like you better than Republicans and Trump. But if you're a libertarian president, you think they're not going to treat you exactly like they've treated Donald Trump, and you'll always be the goat. You'll always be the idiot. You'll always be the one that's criticized. That's the reality of it. And so you have to be tough. You have to have a backbone. And libertarians don't actually have a backbone a lot of times. So I think there needs to be some maturity in the movement. There's a big problem in the movement where we chase competent people out and people who have any kind of knowledge and experience. Like, you know, we get a lot of people come in and go, I'm going to raise money and I'm going to promote the party and I'm not leaving and I promise. And they never do, or they get driven out. And a lot of those people do bring some good institutional knowledge. And there are some people in the party who chase out the institutional knowledge because they want to keep it a club and not a political party, you know. And that's a very toxic trait. And you have to choose not to participate in it, you know. So I think there's a fine line that we're constantly talking about, Reinhold and I specifically, where, like, if you see white ethno-nationalism or a catering of towards racists in the movement, like, do you not shine a light on that, or do you shine a light on it and say, we don't stand for this? I tend to take the tack that if you starve the attention, it's not going to gain attention. But once you start to push on that and start talking about it all the time, the people who are going to exploit the lowest common denominator are going to use you to grow their movement. So I'd rather just not talk about it. And is that cowardly? No, I think cowardly is sucking up to it. I don't think Reinhold agrees with me. I think Reinhold looks at it and goes, no, we should absolutely take the opposite stand. We shouldn't be recruiting the alt-right. And, you know, I find Reinhold's opinion more divisive than mine. But Reinhold, you have a very rational reason for why you think, listen, I support the people who are going out there and taking on podcast hosts or writers who are talking to or cuddling up, like Stefan Molyneux. Let's use him as the example. Like, we've always kind of known who that guy is. He's just saying the quiet parts out loud now. And I'm of the mind that you don't need to tell me that who Stefan Molyneux is. I already knew. But when you try to tell me who Stefan Molyneux is, all it does is just piss everybody off and bring attention to Stefan. You know, but you're like, hey, we got to talk about it.
Well, and my view on that, too, is if people are coming in saying, hey, we should be emulating Stefan and getting more of his people in here, that's when you push back on it, right? Just because Stefan's out there and it exists, don't care. That's his whole thing. He can call himself whatever he wants to call himself. We know what he is. But it's when he starts, when he's starting to be used as a recruitment tool, that's when I get a lot of concern and pushback on, right? I want that out of the party. We've been fighting that since the New Fusionism back in the late 90s. Or early 90s, actually.
What is New Fusionism?
So New Fusionism, there was a Fusionism and Rothbard that was originally around where Republicans were trying to get people into their party, and it kind of failed. But Rothbard decided to try this thing called New Fusionism, where he would try to appeal to the old right, as it's called, right? So the old right was getting disenfranchised because the neocons were coming in, and they were trying to make the compassionate conservative, you know, be a thing. And the old right really kind of translate more into what the alt-right is now. So they would use dog whistles and language that would appeal to them without being overtly in the face saying, hey, we want you guys to come over.
When you say old right, is that like John Birch Society or Pat Buchanan, or like who?
Pat Buchanan was actually the person that they tried to run, that Rothbard and Ron Paul and Lou Rockwell pushed and backed Buchanan for the election in 92. That's kind of when that fusionism started, in like the late 80s, where he got this idea, and then they pushed it and tried to implement it in 92 with Buchanan. Right. So it was kind of a calling out to the alt-right, nationalism, that sort of thing. It was trying to call those people over and say, hey, you have a home here. And that's caused so many problems in the last 30 years because of it. It's not something, I don't know if we're ever going to get rid of. And it's a taint on what we believe and what we're trying to push. But there are people who are trying to defend that those people should be involved.
But if somebody believes in individualism and shares our values and isn't a foreign policy hawk, like, how's that different than a libertarian belief?
Well, it's, first of all, it's the exact opposite of individualism, right? Plus, it's an insidious belief, right? So it's not like
and
a good
which,
faith
but which belief are you talking about?
The belief in like racial nationalism.
Okay, so Stefan Molyneux, right, and his belief that, right, white people are superior, basically. Like he doesn't say it directly, but he's getting pretty comfy with that.
No,
with
he
that
says
idea.
It directly that it's not that the white people are superior; it's that the black people are superior.
Okay.
Right. That's his goal, based off the IQ and the bell curve and all this other stuff. It's been debunked and proven wrong so many times, but everybody goes, right, well, you know, people like Dave Smith goes, oh, but the science is there. And it's like, no, Dave, no, you're
so the, well, the fact is racism, bigotry of any kind is just collectivism.
Right. Yeah. And so is kind of nationalism too, right?
Of course.
Nationalism is a collectivist type of view. Just it's authoritarian. It's collectivism. It's the same as it's on par with communism and socialism, where it's collectivist and authoritarian. You have the same on the nationalism side, right? So it's, I don't know why we would, you know, people say this, you either have to be one or the other. I'm like, no, there's a third way, guys. It's individualism. It's what we are fighting for. It's what the party exists for. So why would we try to change what we are just to try to get some old racist guys to come in and support us?
So Jeff, have you ever heard of Stefan Molyneux?
I have not.
All right. So see, that's my argument, Reinhold, is that you don't even need to mention Stefan Molyneux because Jeff's never heard of him. He's listened to We Are Libertarians, right, for 6 months. He's like, I'm happy. I'm satisfied. I know libertarianism now because I've got the best libertarian podcast in the universe that I'm listening, right, to.
But what happens when he develops further and starts talking to people on social media, and somebody says, oh, this Stefan guy, he's an ANCAP, you should listen to what he has to say, and gives him the tame stuff, right? And gets him saying, oh, yeah, this song guy's doing good. You know,
My argument is that Jeff is an adult and will probably listen to it and go, yeah, no, thank you. He'll probably kick out
but
the
idea. That's not how propaganda happens in a way that subverts that, right? So, yeah, I think that a lot of people would say, no, not for me. But there are people who can get twisted into that mindset, into that view, slowly through that propaganda path.
Propaganda only works in a communal environment. And so if you have somebody like Jeff who's listening to this program, who's encouraging him to think independently, but isn't, I mean, you have no idea how every day you motherfuckers fact check me. Not just the audience, but the people in our group. Hody, it's all the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
My life's a daily...
I've been listening to the Swamp episode, and I got some fact-checking to talk about.
Right, it's just constant, right? Because we, you know, Jeff, I would imagine that one of the things that you like about this show is that we're independent-minded, right? We want you to think about your life and what you think, and then draw your own conclusions.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and all right, settle this argument, Jeff.
All I'm doing is providing information, though. That's what I'm saying is I'm not telling anybody they can't like Stefan.
Yeah, but
this is what he's about.
The unintended consequence,
what you might be getting.
The unintended consequence is that you become the loser brigade that monetize the haters, and then you're growing the resources and the tribalism that exists in Stefan's Twitter feed. You're giving him a foil, and if you take this is the argument that I've had about Trump the whole time. Somebody, you know, wrote me in the Discord, and I'm like, no, my argument is that controversy is the oxygen that Donald Trump breathes. And so if you take away his oxygen by not making him controversial, he goes away a lot faster and loses his power. But if he can monetize you and turn you into a foil, he's going to be a lot more successful. So, Jeff, go ahead.
Or you normalize that behavior. Right. And because you're not calling it out, you normalize it. And it becomes part of the society.
Here's why you're not right. Because we have never had more fucking articles, podcasts, newscast, like they're arguing against Trump more than ever before. This is not who we are for 5 years now. It's more normalized than ever before.
I don't think it's normalized. I think there's going to be there's backlash that's coming.
I think the word is not normalization. It's numbness. And numbness has set in because when Trump farts, it's the most evil fart in all of history. And several. Never mind. I'm not going to go there. Well, I won't make gas reference. Jeff, settle this argument. I mean, you're a very smart individual. Like when you hear us talking about this stuff, do you lean one way or the other?
I don't think for me that I lean one way or the other. And I think kind of this back and forth that's going on now is kind of the exact point of what I'm looking at with the Libertarian Party. And I know the complication comes from, which is what I appreciate about it, is that individualism. And so how do we bring those individual ideas together to hit somebody that's not as smart or not as, versed, but believes in the general pillars of the libertarian ideas? Like, how do we bring them in without outcasting them or without them seeing that obviously debate, because there is that individualism that makes sense.
Sure. How do we not, how do we not stigmatize the 10 people that actually look our way?
Yep.
Anybody?
I mean, and maybe it's not maybe it's not a question to be answered now, but I think for me, I'm looking at it to what can I do in my society? And obviously in smaller circles, it's much easier. But I also believe that politically, nationally right now is a key time that the Libertarian Party could really move from a Gary Johnson's 3 to even a 5 or a 10. If we're not getting people pushed out of the Libertarian Party because they're not anarcho-capitalist enough, or they're not libertarian enough, or those type of things. And I think that's, Chris, your podcast and the group of you guys that are here has made me feel comfortable coming to this panel, where other things that I've looked at that are libertarian I probably would have never asked the question or never emailed them because I felt like, oh, I'm not libertarian enough. I'm just going to get bashed and pushed away. And right. So I think there has to be that understanding is even if there is the idea of individualism, that needs to extend to people that maybe aren't perfect libertarians or right in your viewpoint and accepting them into some degree so that that party can grow. And as Reinhold said, can elevate and make smarter voices out there that are overpowering some of the negative voices that are nationally broadcasting as libertarians.
I think a big part of it is just emotional brokenness and the dysfunction of libertarians and the way that they operate. I mean, and that's why we talk a lot about like, hey, go to therapy. Like here's what an emotionally healthy person looks like, because the reality, what I really think it is that there are a lot of libertarians, and I was one of these people. When I worked for the Libertarian Party, if you criticize libertarianism or the party, I took it very personally and would react very strongly to Republican and Democratic friends on Facebook, for instance, because it was the majority of my identity, the whole of my identity in some cases, especially as like my marriage started to break down, like that was the good thing going on in my life. So I grabbed onto it really hard, you know, and not that that's a bad thing. Like I was at Porkfest and one guy said, if it weren't for the Free State Project, I'd probably be dead from suicide. Like this has given me a community and a place of meaning. And like, that's really good. And when you're in a really low state and you're depressed, like you need to grab onto one thing and then grab onto a second and climb your way out of that. But I think when you function as a person who, you just can't have one singular identity. You can't, if you find yourself reacting strongly to people criticizing your political opinions, it's a bit of an idol. It's a bit of something that you need to probably loosen your grip on and find some other avenues to kind of identify yourself. Like I'm a libertarian, but I'm a podcaster. I'm part of several social circles. Like as my life has gotten emotionally healthier, my reaction to a lot of this stuff has been less strong. And I think that that is something that I've tried to impart to our audience in that this is one part of your belief system. It's an important part, but have other parts too, because once you diversify your emotional banks, you know, Harry and I have talked a lot about this, then you become a stronger person because what you see is a strong reaction by guys who don't have a lot going on in their lives. And so because your ignorance shown in an innocent question combined with the just the knee-jerk brain functioning of social media, it creates a very unwelcome environment. And so one thing that I've intentionally tried to do with We Are Libertarians is Trisha Stewart loves our audience now because she now sees what I've been saying to her for a long time. Like there are aspects of the ANCAP movement that are really toxic. And she's like, I've never had more polite, nice emails from people than the We Are Libertarians audience. And it makes me really believe that liberty could thrive because they're nice people like your audience. You know, and I love that. I want our group to be a group that welcomes women, encourages female participation. And a big part of what I think libertarians have to think about is media representation. And so by having more women on or having people of minority status or having even a socialist come on and talk about it, it doesn't mean that you're ceding ground or that if I have Levy on, Hody's losing a slot. There's plenty of episodes for Hody and Levy, right? Like, but there are a lot of, there's 30-40% of our audience is female and they deserve to hear their voice represented. Harry has been an incredibly important part because, Harry, you play a key role for media representation, you know, and I don't want to talk about the elephant in the room, but it's the fact that you're a giant fucking nerd, and I have no idea what you're ever talking about.
Yeah, and then the worst part about it, I get that at work. I work in IT, and even then they're like, all right, Harry, bring it down.
We get it. You love waifus. But what I really it hit home for me, Harry, when you started coming on weekly on the Tuesday night show, You know, Greg and I were very similar on the Thursday night show, and we had a lot of similar beliefs, and there wasn't, you know, and then when you came on and you started talking, I would just kind of look at you and go, that, like, dude, our audience doesn't want to hear about this tech stuff, or they don't want to hear about the anime, they don't want to hear about your Japanese cartoons. I was so wrong. And you were so right in saying, I'm going to start a Discord. Trust me. We're going to get into gaming. Trust me. Like, you have taught me, listen, you don't need everybody to fit your personality for the show to work. You need to let other people kind of flourish and let their personality shine, because I saw the audience grab onto you in a way that they often don't grab onto me, even, because you represent what they're interested in, you know? And it's that you're a giant nerd that really you bring diversity to this program. It has nothing to do with your skin color.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just because that's what my interests are, is the tech stuff. And it's those techie, like, libertarians. I really wish we could get more like some of the medical nerds that are in libertarian space. Those are guys, really cool and wacky, but they're like nerdy in their own right.
Like zip poppers or what? Nurses?
No, like the people who are like nurses, like libertarian nurses and doctors and stuff like that, people in the medical space.
Man, I don't know if I could handle hanging out with a bunch of libertarian nurses. When I dated you, if you saw they were a nurse, you swipe right hard. Nurses are fun and ready to party.
Okay, I was going to say, like, does right mean good or left mean good?
Right means good, yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
If you saw yoga, Pilates instructor, nurse... Uh-huh. You were like, I know this isn't going to last. Teachers, too. Teachers, you have your fair share of fun in you. Go ahead, Harry.
I was going to say, once Jeff, if you listen to some of the earlier ones, you'll hear me talk about libertarianism and my, touching of it. Because until I really, really started messing with the wall audience, even back then, honestly, I thought most libertarians were assholes. Mm-hmm. I'm talking with them, it was really hard to drop a Republican label, because it was just like, it wasn't like their beliefs, it was just like their connotation of being called, like, you know, no, they're all assholes and mean assholes. You know, I love the things that they're putting down, but they're just complete assholes. Right. And but being with the wall audience and doing all that, that's like, wow, these are some actually nice people. You know, they're not all assholes. Oh my God, look, there's other people out here. But just like the news report of every time the news is out there for any shooting, natural disaster, tornado, brush fire, they're going to find the best person of your community to put in front of a microphone and let them talk. Mm-hmm. Then he's like, oh, this fine young citizen right here in a suit, let's let them talk.
So ours would basically be James Neese.
Yeah. Yes.
So what I'm hearing is that in order for us to really advance liberty in the way it needs to be done, with good people doing good things, is that this podcast needs to become the number one libertarian podcast in the country.
That's exactly right. You need to share.
You guys out there to help us do that.
That's exactly right.
Already done.
Exactly. Hody's right. Well, I think... To answer your question, Jeff, we've talked around this a lot, so we'll start wrapping up here. But I think the answer is each person listening has to be intentional about creating a community in the way that they'd like to see the libertarian movement created. And you have no idea. When I started this, March 8th is our anniversary, 8 years ago, 2012. I had no idea that I would have 50, 60, 100 people come through We Are Libertarians over that time, and just friends, you know, and people like Hody that were just out there listening and, you know, hitting me up and talking. And I'm like, you talk well. Why don't you come on and do an episode? And empowering him and giving him a platform. But, like, it's your responsibility to create the libertarian movement that you'd like to see. It's just people don't want to hear that because it's easier to go, I wish that guy would stop. But you got to really intentionally, and it's sometimes a lot of work, but we're trying to make it easy for you, which is why we have wearelibertarians.com/libertyandchill or /liberty-chill. We're trying to give you resources and say, hey, here's the way. Try this. Do this. You're lonely. You need friends. Try these methods. Do this. Because that's what it's going to take. Like, Harry, your Liberty and Chill group is a friend group, and you guys have socialists popping up, and you're arguing with them, and it turns into something really cool. All right.
We play games. We may sit at a brewery and drink beer, not cocktails. But we actually are considering even, you know, branching out and going somewhere else out of the brewery like this, like back again, to try and do karaoke one time.
Yeah.
Korean barbecue and karaoke. But the more thing is just the camaraderie of friends. You've got a lot of people with libertarian spaces, but you don't get to meet just other people in meet space, IRL. You know, just go out, leave your computer screen, meet some people, you know. Yes, your friends are friends online. That's great. It's awesome. Have those friends. I want you to have those friends.
So,
but
Jeff,
there's something to be...
Jeff, do you want to join our meet space?
Yeah.
Sure. I'm down.
All right.
See? Yeah. Come out in the meet space. See everybody. You know,
this podcast has gone on so long that Jeff grew a mustache. I want you all to see that.
It was there at the start.
Oh,
look at that.
So Jeff, you could do that. You could get together and kind of put Liberty and Chill together there in Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to Fresno once before. I was there for a week one afternoon, and it was a really nice place. So
it is nice. Hot summers, cold nights.
Just like my college days. All right, Jeff. We're not going to go around and do a closing. Hody, you've been exceptionally quiet, but I am going to give you the last word to Jeff afterwards. But Jeff, what do you think? Are you more libertarian now? Like, give us a summation of kind of that. We've given you a lot to process, but what are your general impressions of what you've heard tonight?
I think a lot of what you guys said was what I had formulated in my mind based off of what I knew and what I've learned. And so I think it was affirmation to a lot of those ideas. And so, yeah, I think I wouldn't say that I'm more libertarian 2 hours later than I was 2 hours ago, but, definitely, see that my formulation of those ideas and processes are going in the right direction.
Cool. Hody, would you like to give him some encouragement? You're a very encouraging person.
Yeah. So I think this fifth question, it almost could have been the first question, because like, how do we actually even get started on all of this stuff? How do we even make that happen? Culture, culture, culture. And Harry and Chris talked about it kind of at the beginning. And this is just about love and unity. You look at the success of movements where they were a minority. Okay, because government, I mean, you can have a success in government, like ending segregation, but that only happens after the culture is overwhelmingly already done with segregation, right? They'll only ban slavery after we're like overwhelmingly done with slavery, or have a really real big incentive to get rid of it, right? When government actually does something good, it's only after people have already realized pretty universally that this is a good thing to make happen. And so I can't preach enough that you just need to change the culture. I look at Martin Luther King Jr. for two big reasons. And let me give you one. Chris has talked about this on the podcast, and it's an example I used all the time. And this is that he made it so people that probably should be his enemies, he made alliances with them. Now, a lot of people in the libertarian movement will say, you're catering out. Now it's impure. You brought in all these evil people. And all that. What Martin Luther King Jr. did is he found the racists, because that was still the bulk of the country that thought black people were inferior to white people, and said, now, okay, maybe you don't want us dating your daughters. Maybe you don't want us riding with you on the bus. Okay. Are you okay with it, though, when your police sick the German shepherds on these kids? And made them say no. And found a point where they say, okay, you know what? I'm not ready for this whole liberty thing yet, but I am ready for that. I'm ready for that to stop. I'm ready for them to stop turning fire hoses on your kids. And you know what? That just gets the ball rolling. Because then what's the next step? Oh, you know what? Maybe it's okay if we get educated in the same place too. Oh, you know what? Maybe drinking out of the same drinking fountain isn't such a big deal. Oh, you know what? Maybe it is okay if you date my daughter because you're a human being. But it starts in a place. And right now we're not in a great place for liberty. I get that. All right. But it starts someplace. And so what do we do? What we do is we mimic the successful movements that have come before us. And you say, look, you might not agree with me on everything, guys. We got some great, I work with somebody who does a lot of breed specific legislation and getting rid of banning pit bulls and things like that. And She, including most of the people in the group, are not libertarians, but they believe in liberty in this aspect. And we create that bridge, and we're making progress all over the country. We're getting closer and closer. We're winning that fight. We're winning the fight toward drug legalization. It's because of libertarians. It's because of liberty. The majority of the people who push this are not libertarians and don't yet recognize liberty as a good thing, but we can use them for now. And this is how it starts. And you need to be okay with a start. The second example is that from Martin Luther King Jr. is that you know when to pick your fights. And we kind of got talking about this, about James Weeks dancing naked, and it's easy to take offense to that. And you know what? It was a dumb thing for him to do. And it's okay for you to say it's a dumb thing for it to do, but you shouldn't have to say it too many times. You know what's a more dumb thing to do? How about killing 480,000 people overseas in a war we don't need to be in?
Mm-hmm.
That seems a little stupider to me. That seems a little bit more dumb. You know why Gary Johnson didn't know the name of Aleppo? He shouldn't have to know what Aleppo is, because if Hillary Clinton didn't botch things up over there and Barack Obama botched things up over there and essentially create ISIS and weaponize the people, these terrorists,
all right, bring it
you
home,
wouldn't
Hody.
Have to
bring
know what home. Aleppo
all
is.
All right, Hody's getting – Hody.
Shouldn't
did
have
you,
to
did
know,
you,
okay?
Did you drink vaccines before you started this podcast? Bring it home, man.
I'm injecting right now, baby. We're going. But you see, this is what's important to recognize is they'll say, oh, this is why people aren't libertarians. Everybody's got a different reason every day. We're never going to run out of stupid people saying stupid things from every walk of life. But you can't feed into that too much. Yes, you put your foot down. You say that was a dumb thing. But you know what? I'm still more interested in liberty. I'm still more interested in that than 480,000 dead Iraqi civilians overseas. Is that okay? Is that okay? And I think most people will say, yeah, it is okay. You know, to talk about it, and let me make this positive now. Sorry, I made it negative. I know Chris called on me for positivity here.
I know. If I wanted depressing scenarios, I would have called on Harry.
But I'm at a family reunion a couple of years ago. It was about 40 of us there. And, you know, extended family reunion. And we're talking about liberty stuff. And me and my brother were having some disagreements. But my mom stops everybody and she's like, hey, real quick, now that we got everybody here. You know, I know they're talking politics. Who here isn't a libertarian? And there was two of us out of the 40. And it was because of the strides that I had made in talking with my family, and that got the ball rolling. Now, I didn't talk to every single one of these 40 family members about it, but it reached one member of their family who then talked about it with their family. This is how it happens, and it seems slow. God took the Jews and put them 40 years in a wilderness before they were ready for their own nation. Now, we don't have the benefit of any wilderness going on anytime soon. And so this is going to take more than 40 years. And be prepared for that game.
This is podcast? Take that kind of
time. Podcast, we'll make it more than 40 years, Chris. You hang on, buddy. You just take if you take your vaccinations, you'll be around too in 40 years. I'll make sure of it.
This podcast has gone on so long, I've grown a mustache.
I'll wrap it up. But here's the thing is I think you just keep it positive. We focus on unity. Unity, unity. You can unite with people that are not necessarily great people about a specific issue. Never dismiss someone's problems. When somebody says, I'm having this problem, they might have a totally different solution than you. Most of them are government solutions. That's the way we've been raised, and that's okay. But recognize their problem. Be more passionate about their problem, about fixing their problem, than they are, not less. Don't choose to dismiss. Choose to accept. Choose to embrace. We already have a tough sales pitch in liberty. Don't make it harder by saying that liberty doesn't care about certain problems. Because the bottom line is we do. We care about all those problems. And it's important to a lot of different people. You might be only able to care about breed-specific legislation. Or maybe you're only able to care about legalizing marijuana. Or maybe, man, you're in food service. Maybe you only care about the mountain of legislation that makes it impossible to distribute food in a way that is expeditious and safe. And important and inexpensive, right? Maybe that's where you focus. Focus on that one thing. The liberty movement can't have you doing everything, but it can have you doing one thing and doing it really well, and it makes a difference to a lot of people.
All right. Very good, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us and for being a patron.
Thanks for having me.
Harry, thank you for being here.
Thanks. Thank you. Surviving the coronavirus, but thank you.
Appreciate it. Reinhold, good to see you.
You too.
Harry.
Yeah.
I mean, Hody.
I am the opposite of Harry with the bald head here. No, it's good seeing you too, guys. Always a pleasure to be on.
All right. If you want to join the path, if you have some questions, if we didn't answer all your questions, then please send me an email, editor@wearelibertarians.com. Many of you have. I've not responded to everyone, but I have gotten all of your emails, and I thank you so much for writing in. We'll do more of these episodes. These seem to be fairly popular, and people really enjoy them. So we're happy to do it, and we hope that you'll share these and that you'll share with your friends. And we thank you for listening to We Are Libertarians. You guys are the best audience in the whole world. You make this worth doing and worth putting the time in. And we have so much fun talking to you. And we will see you next week. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you then.